gathered together from the cosmic reaches of the internet. Here in the basement of the Great Hall of Justice are the most powerful forces for good podcasting ever assembled. This is the DC Superpowers Podcast.
This looks like a job for Superman.
To the Batmobile.
My name is John Jones.
I am the Green Arrow.
Hey, super friends, welcome back to the DC Superpowers Podcast, issue number 62 for New Comic Book Day, June 28th, 2017. I'm your host, Ken Rose, and sitting along with me here in the basement of the Hall of Justice is my good buddy, Vern.
Hello, everybody. How you guys doing out there tonight?
Vern, we actually finally got some details on Teen Titans.
Finally, we do. This is some pretty exclusive detailing, too, if you ask me.
Yeah. Well, this week we got a lot, really heavy movie and TV news side, a little bit of comic books, and we have our reviews and previews as always. And actually, we got the first for our review for reviews for this week. We got the first of our summer event books.
Yes, we did.
The Dark Days, The Forge is in our reviews.
This thing is going to be it's going to keep our bellies full of all comic book knowledge right now. This is a big event happening right now.
Oh yeah,
and
this
put Batman in as a star front of all of it.
Yeah, and this has a who's who of comic book writers and artists and anything else
in
this book is doing this book.
And there's a lot of characters in here we haven't seen since Rebirth.
Mm-hmm. So
actually, we haven't seen since New 52, and they're bringing them back, and we haven't seen them in Rebirth at all. We got some hints from some comic book characters we didn't think we would see at all in Rebirth.
Yeah.
You missed one of them, too.
Yeah, I don't know. You have to point that out when we get to that part, because I don't remember seeing him. Unless that's what this
that's
is.
That's what it is, yes.
Oh, okay, yes. Okay. I didn't recognize that. Okay.
I don't know what
I was gonna
role
ask you
he's
going to
play
was.
In there, how big of a role, but he seems pretty important.
Yeah.
But we'll get to that later, guys. Spoiler alert, if you guys haven't read Dark Days, The Forge yet.
Well, everybody knows that's where our reviews work. That's why we put them a week after they actually come out.
But you want to get into it?
Yeah, let's get into this. Now, wait a minute, where are we at? The first story actually gets right into the Teen Titans.
Mm-hmm. So we know that they are making a Teen Titans show. They've been talking about this for a while now. What was this, about a year ago that TNT was supposed to get this Teen Titans or Titans show going at the time. And they had a pilot wrote and the script was done and the details were there. But now they've went along and changed
Yeah, they
it
moved
up.
A different direction.
Mm-hmm. I'm kind of curious on how that would have went on TNT. What kind of titles
I don't
would
know.
We have gotten? I don't know if it would have been a great show for like the fans. It probably would have been good enough.
Yeah.
But
I think this is going to be a lot better because we have Greg Berlanti actually working as a producer on it.
I do too. I really do. But TNT, isn't that more of like a drama-based TV station?
A lot of times, yeah.
From the synopsis I'm going to give you guys about a certain character here, you guys can figure out, and we're going to give you our thoughts on who we actually think it is. But if anybody remembers in the New 52, Dick Grayson did go, what was the number? It was Agent something, right?
Was he Agent 13 or 63 or something like that?
See, this is
I know he was working for Spiral.
Yeah, he was a Spiral. Like I said, I'm sorry, guys. I wasn't big into the New 52. But he did play a detective in there, and that's when we found out he was a police officer.
Yeah.
I think that's where I also got some of that information for the Dark Knight Rises. Remember how Robin in there was a detective?
Yeah.
I think that's really
That
awesome
may have been actually,
that
yeah, that
from.
Makes sense now.
But from the synopsis we got, this is going to be for four characters in the show. One is the main lead, and the other three are series regulars. You guys can figure this out, and at the end of it, we'll tell you who we think each character is.
Okay.
The first one is John Crossland. A male.
Now, these are all working character names. They're not the actual name of the character.
So,
this is just what they're casting it under.
Now, this is what they gave the media, so no spoilers for us, but if you're a fan out there, you can probably put together who these characters are.
Mm-hmm.
This first character is John Crossland, and he is the series lead. The description is male, late 20s, early 30s, Caucasian, equal parts charm, and
impenetrability.
John is a cop. He has a nice smile, tired eyes, and a cool, distant manner. However, when provoked, his eyes are so lethal, they drain the man of every last bit of his spleen. John is haunted by a murder of his family, unbeknownst to the others around him. He is a vigilante in the shadows. He fights with the commitment and conviction of an artist and the brutal grace of a dancer, mentally and physically. He is covered in a map of scars and throughout his fights, he escapes his past. Throughout his fights, he tries to escape his past, but is often losing a battle with him. And this is the series lead. Now who does that sound like?
Being Titans, we know that this is probably going to be Nightwing.
Yeah.
Or the Nightwing or Robin.
The biggest thing that spoiled this, even if they didn't even know about the description, anybody out there, if anyone has been reading up on this, they did say Nightwing is going to be the series lead.
Yeah.
So he's going to be the main character.
Now, for me, though, the one thing that's, or a couple things in here are a little weird for me, and maybe a newer take on Nightwing, but you got to remember, Dick Grayson was really, until more recently, wasn't really haunted the way Batman is by the death of his parents.
Well, I can't say that. He's always been haunted, but he hasn't focused on it like Batman.
Yeah.
Because I even remember in the Teen Titans cartoon, when they went in the back shadow of his mind, he was in a circus, he remembers his parents falling. They never called him Dick Grayson, but we always knew. And once his parents fell to the ground, we seen that in his past, we knew that was definitely Dick Grayson.
But it was, Nightwing, it wasn't as front and center that that's what's driving him to do what this is.
No.
Batman, everything he does is driven because of what happened to his parents.
I feel like after reading this, they're going to take as you said, probably go a little darker with it. I feel like they're going to go a little bit Batman, a little bit of Stephen Amell's Arrow for this
possibly
role. I really do.
One they got up, I'll cover this one real quick.
Okay.
It is Sarah. She's female, mid-teens, open ethnicity. Troubled, bullied, often scared, but unwilling to show it. Sarah is a loner, more comfortable hiding in her hoodie than making her friends. Haunted by a dark force inside her, Sarah experiences violent episodes that she cannot understand or control. She is also plagued by recurring nightmares that lead her across the country in search of help, and she's a series regular.
The hoodie hiding in her hoodie and her being haunted by the dark forces inside of her.
Yeah, dark force inside of her, this is Raven.
Yeah, definitely.
Straight up, this is Raven.
And I really think the nightmare she's trying to run away from are the visions of her father coming to the world like he always does.
Exactly. When your father is like an archdemon, he is basically the devil of his realm. It's kind of hard not to try to run away from that.
Right, and also them saying she's in her mid-teens and she's a troubled bully. So does this mean that they are
troubled by bullies?
Well, does this mean that she's actually going to be in high school? We're going to see something a little different.
It looks like, you got to remember, this is Teen Titans. So they're all going to, should be about high school age.
Except for, it seems like,
except for,
The next
Dick Grayson.
We're going to mention too.
And,
Cassie.
Yeah, Cassie.
This next one is Cassie. Female, 20s, open ethnicity. Cassie is tall, stunning woman. Her beauty is magnificent. It's almost inhuman. Elegant, refined, and mysterious. She is on the hunt to discover who is trying to kill her and why. And those after her are in for a surprise because she's more deadly than anyone they've ever encountered. She's a series regular, too. With her being a tall, stunning woman and her beauty is magnificent.
I love how they say almost inhuman.
Yeah. As everybody knows, this is probably going to go to Starfire.
Yeah, this will be Starfire.
And also, she's trying to discover who she is, and those after her are going to be surprised because of how deadly she can be. Now, remember in the comic books and the cartoon, any adaptation of Starfire, I always seen she was leaving her home because her sister was trying to take over what she wanted. And what Kauri had, who they're saying Cassie is Starfire, she was already going to be the queen of her planet.
Yeah.
But Blackfire, her sister, wanted to be the queen of her planet. So they were trying to actually hunt her down. You know,
well, yeah, if she dies, then her sister can have the throne.
Exactly. And she landed here on Earth, and then we remember, even in the New Jewish Contract animated movie, she gets to Earth, she finds the Teen Titans, she sees Dick Grayson, or at least pays the most attention to him as Robin, and she does not know our language at all. And the only way she can do that is by kissing somebody else. She does that, gets our language, and can interpret everything we know, and she stayed on this planet. And she's been hiding on this planet since then.
Yeah.
I feel like this, since they're giving this detail, I feel like it's in one of the seasons, this is going to be a big part of it, to see her family trying to hunt her down, at least her sister.
Well, the last one we have up here, which is makes up the main four of your cast,
I feel like we're missing one. Wasn't this supposed to be like a five members, basically?
Well, you got to remember, one of them's part of the Justice League now.
Yeah. I have my issues with that, but continue.
So the last one, the description they have here is male. His name is Jax. Male, mid-teens, open ethnicity, Asian preferred. Funny and charming, this amateur thief's humor hides his insecurities and past pain. Not the toughest kid on the streets, he's learning to survive in the world with his wit and quick thinking. He's a series regular. This is probably Beast Boy.
Yeah, he's always the funny. I didn't remember him being a thief, but I guess to live on the streets like he's going to do now, since we're getting to introduce everybody, I guess he would have to do that, but by humoring people.
Yes.
And he always used his charm and his humor to even hide the scars that he feels, because remember, he feels like an outcast still. No matter how much Beast Boy can put a smile on anybody's face, he always is a little timid on revealing who he really is, because he's green. He's a green human. This might be before he was able to embrace it and accept that he is just like everybody else. So, well, this was all from Den of Geek, by the way, guys. It's on their website. It was kind of hard to find this. I heard this on a video on YouTube that they actually released this. Found this a little earlier in the week, and here we go. So, who knows? We might be able to get some more of this. And if they talk about anybody with robotic parts, I will be very happy.
Yeah. Actually, in the same article, they have the actual official synopsis for this also. The description of this show is Titans follows a group of young, soon-to-be superheroes recruited from every corner of the DC universe.
I like that.
In this action-packed series, Dick Grayson emerges from the shadows to become the leader of a fearless band of new heroes, including Starfire, Raven, and many others. Titans is a dramatic live-action adventure series that will explore and celebrate one of the most popular comic book teams ever.
Yes.
Now, this is, where is it? Akiva Goldsman is actually the writer. He's back as the writer, which I believe he was the writer on the TNT adaptation of it, too. Yeah, he wrote the original script. So,
okay.
But he was also, he did Underground, the upcoming Star Trek Discovery, which we just found out the release date for.
Mm-hmm.
And he did Batman and Robin.
Hey.
So, then he's...
he's joined.
He wrote the script. Along with DC president and CCO Jeff Johns,
yep,
and DC's TV guru Greg Berlanti.
So there you go.
So you got a team of guys who know what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Berlanti, it says, was going to be joined by Sarah Schechter, who also is an executive producer on Arrow, Legends of Tomorrow, The Flash, and Supergirl. They're both executive producers from Weed Roads Pictures and Berlanti Productions in association with Warner Brothers Television. Now, there's no word, no one said this is actually part of the Flash and Arrow universe, but the way the multiverse works,
mm-hmm,
this could definitely be part of this.
And the best thing about the multiverse, that is their little loophole to put in different characters from different universes.
Yeah.
If we want Wally on this team, we might get Wally on this team. Who knows?
Well, like we've been speculating since we heard about this show, that this would be very easily, especially with Berlanti and Schechter producing this,
yep,
to spin off the Wally we have in Flash now,
mm-hmm,
to move him to Titans,
yep,
to so that it ties it in and we have a character from those
even
shows.
If he's not going to be a series regular on Arrow, they can use him like they used Jesse Quick in the second season,
mm-hmm,
of The Flash.
Now, I'm not seeing when this show comes out yet. As of right now, I think we're still looking at least a year,
mm-hmm,
year and a half out. This is still supposed to be on that new DC Comics app.
Right.
Or new streaming channel.
Along with Young Justice.
With season 3 of Young Justice. So, and I'm scanning the rest of the article to see what's going on. The digital service is supposed to launch in 2018, next year. So this and Young Justice are the two anchor shows for it. Now, more than likely, being a DC, let me see exactly what it says. Let me read as this goes. It turns out Warner Brothers was just biding their time instead on Titans, because Warner Brothers is who actually canceled it for TNT.
Okay.
So it looks like they were actually biding their time, because Titans is going to be one of the staple pieces for a new digital subscription service launching in 2018.
This is why I love DC and Warner Brothers for that reason right there. They make sure everything tries to stay in the same universe.
Yeah, they're going to try to keep it all together.
Yeah, please.
But
do.
It looks like I said, it'll be sometime 2018.
Mm-hmm.
It's on a new service, which if they keep it all DC, we've speculated here that they got a huge repertoire of stuff they can put on there.
Yep.
They can put Smallville on there. We can go back to the old Superboy TV series.
We can get Constantine on there. Who knows?
Constantine's already on CWC, so it's not that hard to move over.
Right.
You can get the old 70s Wonder Woman, the 66
yep.
Batman.
Yep.
You can have all the DC movies
we've ever had.
You
think we'd even get the old Teen Titans TV show?
It's possible. Titans TV show, the Super Friends.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that was nice.
The Galactic. Batman and Superman animated series, Justice League Unlimited,
was it
all that.
Galactic Guardians?
Galactic Guardians was one of them also, yeah.
That was when we first got Cyborg on the, basically Justice League at that point, Super
mm-hmm.
Friends.
So hopefully this gets a chance and gets on regular TV also, but right, as of right now, it's just for the streaming channels.
Good. And I wonder if that's... I was wondering if that was a little bit from TNT with the whole Detective Grayson, too.
It's possibly from the original version.
Something I thought about. But since they're going to be directing it and working on producing it, we're in good hands.
Oh, yeah. Next up is HBO is moving into the superhero realm.
Now, years ago, they wanted to do this. I mean, this was before Game of Thrones even came out.
Mm-hmm.
They wanted The Watchmen to be on HBO, and this was supposed to also be a spinoff of what the movies were and go and dive deeper into the story of The Watchmen.
Yeah.
And also, a couple years ago, we got some more Watchmen comic books that explored more of their comic book origins and their lore and what they were doing also. So they could pull from that. But this is something HBO wanted for a long time. Zack Snyder did drop out of it years ago, but it looks like it's coming back. It says, Who's the Watchmen? Apparently, we will watch them on HBO. Warner Bros. Is rebooting The Watchmen as an HBO series. It seems like it's been home for such success like Game of Thrones, The Sopranos, and The Wire.
It's funny that they go to The Sopranos and The Wire, but not something like Westworld, which is one of the biggest shows on there right now.
That was the one thing I was looking at. Where is this in the article? That's one of the better things that's going on right now, and it's tapping into that whole science fiction world, too. At least we know of for right now, we're holding back on when it comes out for the HBO series and the release date, but The Watchmen is suited for it. Damon Lindelof will be leading the project after coming freshly off The Leftovers. Is that another HBO series?
I don't know.
Oh, well. He is also known for his series Lost and Ridley Scott.
Yeah, he was
for Prometheus.
He was J.J. Abrams' partner on Lost.
And now, see, Lost didn't have the best ending, but that was a series fans would flock to every
people
week.
People still love that show.
Yeah, I remember they got so big, they started having their own merchandise for that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really good. Ridley Scott's Alien prequel, Prometheus, did have some pretty good numbers in the theaters.
Yeah. I enjoyed it. I actually have it on Blu-ray.
I still rewatch it. Now, I've seen the new Alien. Have you seen the new Alien movie?
Yes.
I like Prometheus better than I do the new Alien movie.
Yeah.
That's me, though.
Well, the new Alien movie felt a lot like the original Alien movie, mm-hmm. but it gives you a lot more backstory.
Yeah, it felt like Prometheus with Alien in it.
Yeah.
I don't know if that makes any sense, but I enjoy Prometheus a lot. And it also says, according to Vanity reported the series...
Variety.
Oh, I'm sorry. Thank you. Why am I thinking of Vanity
Vanity's
right
a
now?
Totally different show.
Yeah, it's a completely different
magazine.
You need to stop reading that. According to Variety report, the series would not be based off Zack Snyder... would not be based off Zack Snyder's movie, but will be in a new reinvention of the series for the network. HBO has previously attempted and put together a show based on Virgo's series before, but it was completely fell apart. And that's the one I was telling you years ago that they tried that. So now I guess they're scrapping all of that and coming up with something new. Okay. Well,
you got to remember, The Watchmen has always been more of a mature reader's comic book.
Oh, yeah. I was going to say, I think that's why the movie at the time... I love the movie. I had to buy that on director's cut. I feel like that's one of the best movies Zack Snyder ever directed.
Yeah.
I really like The Watchmen. And also, I think I like it so much because I had the comic book with me, the graphic novel, and I was watching the movie, and I'm reading the comic book, so you see similarities. It was basically panel for panel, word for word, straight out of the book.
Nice. Now, I never really made it all the way through Watchmen, but I had a hard time with the style of you get a chapter of the comic book, then you mm-hmm. get a whole chapter of just regular written chapter,
mm-hmm.
and then you get another comic chapter, and then you get a novel chapter. That threw me off.
Yeah.
I don't have a problem with reading, but I'm not extremely fast when it comes to that stuff.
And to me, this is also... Zack Snyder is a great director when it comes to certain things. Some things he kind of falls off.
Yeah, he has his style.
But I have found out most of his movies are better for director's cut. As I said, the Watchmen director's cut, it felt, once again, a little bit more in line with certain things that would fit. Instead of seeming like it's a little choppy, like they go from this place to another place.
Okay.
But anyways, I thought it was a great movie, but at the time when it was made, I don't think a lot of people were ready for it. They were used to the Iron Man, I think, that came out around that time. What Batman was doing, but he was still a superhero. It didn't get as dark and gritty.
Yeah.
This one was pretty dark. Very dark.
Well, it's going to be interesting seeing them do this with at the same point right now, DC is bringing the Watchmen into the mainstream DC universe.
Mm-hmm. And that's, we're on, where are we, on DC Comic Book News, guys, and the actual picture they have for this article is what's going on with the Button series right now. We are getting Thomas Wayne and Reverse Flash with the Watchmen's Flashpoint Rebirth DC logos. And the Button also is on there with the blood on it. So everything's tied in right now in the comic books. This show is going to, I think, focus more on so just the Watchmen. But who knows when it comes to Dr. Manhattan or Ozymandias, we might be able to get some little glimpses into the other things in the DC world.
Well, it's possible.
Or what they can at least do.
Yeah. Well, moving from television and HBO to actual movie news now, we actually have a possible spoiler on the second Justice League trailer.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the first trailer I thought was awesome.
I did too. I really enjoyed it.
The teaser and the actual trailer.
It brought a little bit more of a lighter hearted sense to the DC world.
Now, no one said when this is coming out, but all signs point to Comic-Con.
Mm-hmm. A lot of speculations, I'm pretty sure.
So hopefully at Comic-Con we'll get the second trailer. But it looks like there's supposedly, according to this, a leaked synopsis for the trailer in actual shot-by-shot.
Mm-hmm.
And the one that's interesting here is in the description, it says that after the Justice League title shot, we get the money shot,
mm-hmm.
which is Batman is driving towards some kind of ship when Superman, in the black suit, beard, and mullet, lands in front of him, or in front of it with red eyes and an evil smirk. There's fire in the background, raining ash, a great visual shot, while Batman has a look of, oh crap, as the trailer ends.
Mm-hmm. The only thing I have an issue with here that I don't think is real is the mullet. I don't think it's mullet.
You never know. They may have gone with that because you got to think how much of the death of Superman was put into the Batman v Superman.
I don't know. I would say he just has his long hair. The mullet, I don't think he had time to stylize.
Well, I think it'll be close.
it'll be pretty close. I'm just joking here. But, yeah, with the way this sounds and what this is leading to, it seems like what Joss Whedon has worked on. There's been a couple photos floating around the internet, too. You want me to punch them up and see what I can find? I'm doing some reshoots. It seems like he's gone to a different platform, a different... what's the word I'm looking for here? A different plateau of resources he's went to try to make some new scenes for the Justice League.
Yeah, you can look up a couple of things there. But this looks like it's going to be interesting. Like I said, the movie doesn't come out until November, so we may not get it even at Comic-Con. But it looks like Comic-Con's where we're going to get this new trailer. So, but while you're looking that stuff up, I can move on to the next story. Because actually, the next two stories actually have to do with Comic-Con, but they're both about the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
One of them has to do with Comic-Con, one does not. So we'll start with the first one.
I think...
Which is, nope. Just like Batman the Killing Joke last year, Batman and Harley Quinn is getting a premiere at Comic-Con this year, at San Diego Comic-Con 2017.
I was going to say, Killing Joke did that mm-hmm. last year, and it's funny, both of those were Batman movies.
Yes. Well, that's whatever the big animated movie is coming out.
Mm-hmm.
This one is going to be in Ballroom 20 on July 21st, which is during Comic-Con. They're going to do an actual premiere of Batman and Harley Quinn. Now, let me see. I'm trying to see if there's any other big details. Other than that's all it says, except that because all the rest is basically descriptions of what we've already gone through and who mm-hmm. some of the actors are and things like that. So, but anybody going to Comic-Con this year, we want a review. Send us a review of this. Tape yourself on your phone. Send it to us.
Oh, yeah.
DCSuperpowersPodcast@gmail.com. Or anybody who's going to any Comic-Con and you pick up something from there, you want to send it to us. We'll put it on the show. We may have you Skype in. That's fine.
Yeah, I was going
to
say, we'll give you a shout. We'll give you all the credit you deserve.
That's right. We could use con correspondents because we don't always get out to all the big conventions and stuff. But
Sally justly don't pay us enough to just go out to those places.
Yeah.
You know?
And they've not given us our pass to use the teleporters yet.
Dang it. One day we will. Although I might puke after getting off that thing.
It's possible.
But here's the reshoots.
Okay.
Here's the set photo.
Wait a minute. Is that supposed to be the Hall of Justice?
Right. That's what a lot of people are speculating. It could just be a window.
Well, you're going to have to save some of these images that we're looking at right now so you can put them on Instagram.
Okay. Now, this is...
So don't lose
it. It's kind of hard to find. It's supposed to be easier. I went on Google Photos and tried to find this. Now, I had to go on some websites and find this. This is from Twitter of DC World, and they put this out. There's just a couple photos. They're hidden under some tents here. on some tarps, but one of the photos looked like it's in the shape of a Hall of Justice. As I said, it could just be a window. I wouldn't get my hopes up really for it at this point in time. But with Joss Whedon directing this, we do you guys do remember in the Avengers, we did get the Avengers Tower in the first movie. Who's to say we don't get a Hall of Justice in the first movie of Justice League?
Then maybe we get the Watchtower in the second movie?
Hey, I'll be down for that.
Okay. Well, back to Batman and Harley Quinn. The same article that said that they're getting the Comic-Con premiere, actually, we have the details about what's being released with the how you can actually get this. Now, Batman and Harley Quinn's being released digitally on August 15th. What do you got now? Oh, who's that?
This is more news. This is the new Black Canary costume.
Oh, nice.
Hmm.
Okay. So this is something you're going to have to, like I said, you're going to have to put this stuff on Instagram. You can't go searching during the show.
This is what happens when I get on one side, I just can't stop. Sorry. Continue. I'm just being nerd out over here.
But the digital copy, you can order and have it released August 15th, but you have to wait until August 29th for the physical copies, but you have multiple options on this. It has the Blu-ray Deluxe gift set, which will run you $39.99, comes with a Harley Quinn mini statue that looks pretty cool, according to this.
I'm pretty sure.
Now, if those are still a bit too rich for your blood, don't worry. There's also a regular Blu-ray combo pack starting at $25 suggested, and the DVD on its own is just $20. The digital release on August 15th is going to be $20 for the high def or $15 for the standard. And it looks like there is a 4K release of this also.
Okay.
So if you have a 4K TV, you can get the 4K release of it. The other one that we have here is the same movie that we were just talking about is getting... Oh, wait a minute. I just canceled that. No, I didn't. Oh, there, Matt. DC Comics or DC Entertainment is getting together with Fathom Events again and doing a one night only in the theaters for Batman and Harley Quinn. It's going to be at participating Fathom Event theaters on the DVD. It says the Blu-ray will be released on the 15th. I believe it's usually a week ahead of time. In the article here, it says when it's being released. The press release for this had it. Okay. Following the this is the press release from that was put out on the 22nd of June. It says, following the successful big screen presentations of Batman the Killing Joke and Batman the Return of the Caped Crusaders in 2016, Warner Brothers Studios, DC Entertainment, and Fathom Events are proud to announce a special one-night cinema event for the latest DC Universe original movie, Batman and Harley Quinn, on August 14th in movie theaters nationwide. So, it says one night prior to the release, to the digital release on the 15th, you can, see it in the theaters. And it says it'll screen Monday, August 24th at 7:30 local time. In addition to seeing the films, audiences will get, at the one night screening will be the first to experience an exclusive featurette spotlighting the film's starring character, Harley Quinn. Now, tickets can be purchased starting on June 30th. Online at the Fathom Events website, which is fathomevents.com, or at your participating box office.
Now, are we going to go see this like we did Killing Joke?
I didn't get a chance to go see Killing Joke, remember? It was on the same night as Geek Watch 1 was recording live.
Right.
You got to go see it, but this time I will be able to. Maybe we'll go down to Regal and talk to
Devin,
and go hang out with him and see it. So
maybe we'll get another poster.
So this is going to be cool. Yeah, we're gonna have to buy our tickets early and make sure that we're front line there.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Once again, do a Facebook Live from there.
Mm-hmm. As we did last time. It was fun.
Oh, yeah. And these type of events are fun because, you know, it's fans that are there checking it out.
Only
it's not
fans.
Everybody.
And it was packed when we went last time. I was not expecting to see that many people come out for the Killing Joke. I just really wasn't expecting that. I've never been to a movie event where it lasts only one night. I didn't know how packed it was going to be on, what was that, a Monday?
Yeah. Oh, these special events sometimes get pretty full.
Yeah, we sold out. My buddy had some issues with his car, and he had to go back to his car because he locked himself out. And we were like, we're going to try to save your seat here, man, but it's getting pretty scarce in here. So we'll be there. We will be there, guys. And join us. If you're out there, hurry up and get your tickets if you want to see me and Ken. We'll let you know in a couple of weeks when exactly we are going to go and what theater we're going to go to. So we'll let you know. We'll put that on our Facebook. We'll put that on our Twitter so you guys will find us.
Okay. Now, the last thing we had in movies was actually Toby Emmerich, who's the head of Warner Brothers Pictures, was talking with Variety about their plans for the future of the DC Cinematic Universe and what they got going on.
And this is really great. This is something that I think every fan was happy to hear about. These are things we've been wondering since the Dawn of Justice movie. Will Greg Berlanti and Geoff Johns make the DC Universe feel more lighthearted? Will we feel like we've seen our childhood again? But from this, it looks like we will. The fans of DC comic book film franchise have certainly had their concerns with an overall future of beloved characters when their favorite superhero launched into the spotlight summer blockbuster season. Until the past year, we were incredibly overwhelmed with the success of Wonder Woman's solo film, featurette directed by Patty Jenkins and starring Gal Gadot, reprising her role from the underwhelming Batman vs. Superman Dawn of Justice. Many of the film gore cited themselves, or some anticipations and others in agony. Yeah, I think we talked about how...
Yeah, we were kind of in the middle of there.
Yeah. Although BVS is a comparison release with The Suicide Squad, not have been popular with critics and fans in themselves. The film is proven itself successful and gross... I didn't know it made that much. $1.6 billion from their worldwide exhibition. That's pretty good. Add success to Wonder Woman into the mix, Warner Brothers Pictures have renewed an interest in making their DC films and properties to keep pace. Keep pace. Thank you. Also, we got to keep the peace with the fans, too.
Oh, yeah.
Warner Brothers Pictures have... Oh, sorry. We're going over that. Toby Emmerich to the role of president and chief of... content officer, especially with the recent ousting of production head Greg Silverman. DC Films will be priority for the studio. An exclusive interview with Variety, and we're gonna mix an unfamiliar he's unfamiliar with the comics, doesn't entirely set him outside of determining what makes it a good film. I do feel like I speak motion pictures. He told the writer Britt Lang, I speak for the audience. I looked and asked, how does this work for a general audience? Emmerich has already earned the support from DC Entertainment, president, chief creator, Geoff Johns, and he is very confident in Emmerich on understanding these are just the superpowers. These are also people. And there was another article I also read where Greg Berlanti and John Byrd were asked similar questions, and they also had to say they know that Batman vs. Superman was a little dark, and fans didn't take to that as well. And also, Suicide Squad did have a lot of great actors in it, and they were playing great characters, but the problem was it was the pacing of the movie that seemed a little off. With them even saying they seemed a little issued with that, which was what most fans said, they're going to try to fix it. Most of the time, if a studio avoids these questions, they're going to stick on the same path they want, or they don't know what they're going to do. If they're going to deliberately, all three of these men are going to deliberately answer these questions and talk about the problems, we know we're going to get these fixed, and we already seen that with Wonder Woman. So I really don't think we have anything to worry about now with the Justice League or any other DC films.
Okay. Well, it's going to be interesting to see what happens and see what he does to shake things up, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that kind of scares me is there's been some headlines running around that out of this interview that they're looking to possibly put 3 to 4 movies a year out.
Yeah.
I think that's moving way too fast.
That was a rumor, definitely a rumor. Now, that may happen.
Yeah.
But I don't see why they need to, although right now I think we're doing 2 films per year, right?
Yeah, you can keep that pace up. Marvel's been doing it for a little while now.
Mm-hmm.
DC needs to actually just prove that they can do more than one really good film at a time.
Right. We've got Wonder Woman. Now if we can get Justice League.
Hopefully Justice League comes out and looks good.
Mm-hmm.
We know we have Aquaman already filming for next year.
Yeah.
And the Batman's gearing up.
Mm-hmm. We don't know too much about the Flash movie.
Well, no, actually the Batman's not next. Actually, after Aquaman is supposed to be Gotham City Sirens.
That's right. And David Ayer is coming back for that, and he's reprising his role as director.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see how all this pans out. I did hear some rumors about Nightwing even being added, and we do know that Josh Whedon is also working on a Batgirl film.
Yeah.
So we got some things to look forward here. But I think we're gonna be doing pretty good. The properties seem like they're intact with Warner Bros. And DC Comics, which is always a good thing. You get a thumbs up from me there. Now we just gotta see if we're gonna get good, solid films like Wonder Woman.
Yeah.
And we did also see with Suicide Squad, they were trying to get on the right path. It wasn't like they completely disregarded everything that was wrong before.
Like I said, my problem with Suicide Squad wasn't a bad film.
Right.
It was a thin film for me.
Mm-hmm. And that's what they.
It was very light
pacing.
On story.
Yeah. Oh, that was the other thing they said. The story was just not all the way there.
Yeah. It was the story for me on Suicide Squad. We already talked about it on here. They said, okay, then the very beginning they said, okay, this is your Suicide Squad. Next is, this is what they got to do. And then they go do it, and that's it.
Yeah.
There was no character development, really. There wasn't much of anything else there.
No. As I said before, when we discussed this before, when I went into Suicide Squad, I loved how they showed each character's backstory at the beginning of the movie. And when they showed Deadshot's, I'm thinking to myself, this is perfect. When they showed Harley's, it was perfect. Then after those two characters, they kind of just kept going on real fast. Oh, I'm sorry. I did really and also enjoy Captain Boomerang's. That's the first time I got to see Ezra Miller as the Flash. So those were the main three Suicide Squad members that I think they did really great with their backstory. When it came to Enchantress, I feel like it was a little rushed. Rick Flagg's was rushed, and everybody else's was rushed.
Yeah, Mike here makes a good point. Mike Emke, a buddy of ours from over at Weeby Geeks, and
thanks for listening to us right now live, Mike.
And my partner over on Wookie Radio. He's actually made a good point that it seemed like a Suicide Squad. They really weren't sure how to end the movie.
No. The only good
story was the major problem with this movie in general, I think. And that was just another symptom.
And the problem was they were trying to make a setup for the DC films. They were remember when Bruce Wayne went to talk to Amanda Waller at the very end? It's like, okay, I would have liked for you guys to focus more on just the Suicide Squad film instead of trying to show us we're going to get the Justice League.
Yeah.
You know we're getting the Justice League. Don't worry about that. That's one of the best things about Wonder Woman. We didn't even get Bruce Wayne in there. We did get her emailing him, but it made sense with the story.
Yeah.
If it doesn't make sense, everything else really just feels rushed.
Mm-hmm.
We don't need that.
Well, I think that's the difference with the Wonder Woman movie is we even said this, that it was only a month or two before Suicide Squad was released when Geoff Johns was put in charge of the movies.
Yep.
So he really couldn't put much into that one.
No, I feel like he might have said,
whereas
hey,
with Wonder Woman, he had a lot more time to help guide anything that looked like it was a little out of whack.
Yeah.
It's basically that, because over in Star Wars right now, they're having an issue with losing directors and stuff.
They are having a pretty bad issue right now.
And we were, no, not really, because it looks like what it is just,
well,
some of the people just, it's a misunderstanding between the people
above. Yeah, what they want to do with the character and how the director saw him from what the producer
did. One of the questions that was put out there on one of the other shows I listened to was like, should Star Wars have someone like a Kevin Feige over at Marvel, who basically the buck stops here?
Mm-hmm.
He's in charge of making sure everything goes straight. In a straight line.
To be honest
now,
with you, yes, I agree.
DC
with that.
Has one now in Geoff Johns.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't have that before.
No, they did not.
But the question with that one was, does Star Wars need someone like that? But that's neither here nor there for our show. We'll discuss that next week on Wookiee Radio.
But I was even telling my mother earlier that I think the reason why DC comic books are doing great, DC TV shows are doing good, and from what we see, the movies are finally getting on the right track. There is somebody in the forefront to say, hey, I'm the guy you guys go through if I don't think this works, or maybe can tweak this. I'm giving my suggestions for it.
Well, the reason comic books, not just DC, but DC, Marvel, Image,
all of these,
IDW, all of them usually have their chief editor does this, and he has him and his crew specifically to guide the book, saying, you know what, this is the through line for everything, that everything has to conform to this line.
Yep.
Whether or not that line is where people want it to be,
that
with the New 52, everything conformed to the line of where the New 52 was at, even though I personally didn't like it.
Same here. But it made it. I didn't really enjoy the New 52, but I did really I can respect that they were going on the same line. They had this story in line, they're going to stick with it until the very end, which they did.
Yeah, they chose a path and continued on it.
If they wouldn't have done that, I don't think Rebirth would have been as spectacular as it is now.
Yeah. So, we got one more story before we get to our reviews. And this one here is kind of made both of us give a little bit of a grin.
Yeah,
because
sorry here, but we're happy to read this.
Now we've said for a while ago that we dropped off of Justice League.
Yeah, the books,
the original Justice League book.
Yeah,
because it's just something, and I think it comes down to because the art will look fine to me,
art
the drawing,
great.
The everything else is fine. It's just something with the story, and I think that falls to Brian Hitch.
Mm-hmm.
Who's been writing it since Rebirth.
Right.
But he's put out on his Instagram or Twitter, and it's actually been confirmed that Brian Hitch, as of issue 33 of Justice League, is starting his final series of books for Justice League. He's going to be walking away from Justice League. Now, the tweet that he put out was, writing an outline for what will be my last Justice League story, starting in issue 33, John Williams accompanies me with the at London Symphony. So that brings up a couple questions. One is he's starting his final story arc, or starting outlining the final story arc of issue 33, which is a long ways down the road for us.
Very, because
that's next year.
Issue 9?
No, Justice League is on in the low 20s. That's 10 or 11 issues away from where we're at now.
Oh, okay.
We know that's the way comic book work. You're at least a year out from the, or 2 years out from a release date when you're writing it, because you still have to have time for the people to do all the art and the inking and everything else to get it out there.
Now, I don't think he's, I'm going to put, for me at least, I don't hate the stories. It's not that I think they're bad. It's just, I'm not really, there's nothing about it that's attracting me as a fan to say, hey, I'm going to buy this.
It's just, there's something about it just it didn't catch me.
For me, it just feels a little underwhelming for a Justice League book.
Yeah.
If this was an Aquaman book, a Wonder Woman book, a Flash book, a Batman book, if it was a solo book, I think it would do better. But for the things that they're dealing with the Justice League, it doesn't seem like it's on a big enough scale to really grab me. It's like, oh, this is happening? You don't even need the whole Justice League for this.
For me, one of my favorite times of reading Justice League was, I believe it was Grant Morrison, rebuilt the JLA. Back in the mid-90s.
Yep, and that was
Loved that team.
That's when we had our bearded Aquaman. We had Kyle Rayner as Green Lantern.
Yeah, Kyle, you had Wally.
Splash.
Who else do we have in there? It was Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman, Wally West as Flash.
Wonder Woman, of course.
Was it Martian? Kyle, I don't know if Martian was in there. I think he was.
I think he was,
Manhunter was in there.
The only ones that changed up was...
Well, they swapped out Manhunter for Cyborg.
Now.
Yeah.
But back then, Martian Manhunter was still on the team. But Kyle and Wally, I think, were the only two new members, at least at the time.
Okay.
I may be wrong. I'm still trying. My head's kind of scratchy on the Martian Manhunter. I'm really not remembering him.
I think he was in there. I have the run at home in my boxes. I'll have to
pull
it out.
I've got a couple upstairs. I just don't remember Martian as fine.
Another one that's interesting in here is he's writing this, starting this new story arc at issue 33, but he's, and it specifically says he's, John Williams accompanies me with the London Symphony. So I'm assuming he may be listening to the original Superman soundtrack. Because the London Symphony recorded that with John Williams. But then again, Williams recorded a lot with the London Symphony. All the Star Wars soundtracks were done with them, except for the newest one. So you never know. But in the end, John Williams writes, it's something epic.
Yeah, he's getting to his beast mode right now.
Yeah, so
he's
very
highly focused.
Brian Hitch is writing something truly, what he considers truly epic.
At least for this standard, it's very epic.
So we gotta wait a year or so before we get to see what it is.
Now that might be something very interesting. He might blow our mind. He might blow our minds with that. We might have to pick up that issue just because this is last run.
So, but that actually brings us to the end of our news for this week. And I think it's time for some comic reviews.
Oh, we have some good books.
Oh yeah.
Are we gonna hold off on Dark Forge to the very end?
Yeah, Forge is gonna be the end. Okay. Why don't you start off with Suicide Squad? Because I didn't pick up Suicide Squad. I forgot it was a tie-in with...
the Action Comics.
With Action.
Right now. This was just a lot of fun. I think what happened in Action, though, happened before what happened
Because that one there, they destroyed
You're right, because of what...
What do they call it? Dark Vault.
Thank you.
The Dark Vault is destroyed in there, and that's at the very beginning of Action.
Well, if you guys remember from us saying... Now, this is Suicide Squad issue number 19, and this is Earthlings on Fire.
Now, to set this up a little bit, remember that in Suicide Squad and in Action, we have the Superman Revenge Squad,
right,
which is Metallo, the Eradicator, Blank, Mongo, and Cyborg Superman.
And Metallo.
No, I said Metallo first.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It's on the cover of Action.
Then
it was nice and easy.
Oh, okay. Simple.
But they're getting together to finally take out Superman again.
Yes.
So, then in Suicide Squad, for the last couple issues.
And that's what I thought was funny, because this is like Superman Suicide Squad.
Yeah. Well, they're the Superman Revenge Squad. But in Suicide Squad, you've got Zod, a couple of months ago, the Suicide Squad got him. This is actually a storyline that goes all the way back to the beginning of Rebirth, when the Suicide Squad found the Black Vault.
Yep.
And they accidentally released Zod from this prison.
And that's when we thought we got rid of Captain Boomerang.
Yeah. Well, they had Zod with the bomb in his head for a while.
Yep.
The last Suicide Squad issue of this
has this kind of ultimate power.
Yeah. He cut the bomb out of his head with his own heat vision.
He didn't cut it out. He blew it out.
Yes. But since he's at the Suicide Squad at Bell Rev, you got... leading up to this Suicide Squad, you have the Eradicator and the Cyborg Superman attacking... Spell Rev so that they can actually rescue Zod to have him fight with them.
Now, here's the big issue, what's going to happen, I think, in both books right here. That's going to play a big part in issue with the Revenge Squad. Zod is a general.
Yes.
He does not like taking orders from anybody else. And this is going to play out in the book here. So when we open this up, we get to see all the... Ugh, nasty. All the stuff that came out of Zod's head on the floor here, and we get to see these phantom ghosts. What are these things you would call them? The ghosts that's attacking them.
They're kind of similar to Phantom Wraiths or something like that, something from the Phantom Zone.
And they're attacking the Suicide Squad.
Yeah. Zod released them from the Black Vault.
Mm-hmm. They're his friends.
Yes.
Also, he has other friends in here, which is the Eradicator and Cyborg Superman, saying they came just to take the Kryptonian. They want nothing else or nothing more. They just want to get him out. But if anybody stands in their way, you know they're going to try to take him.
Oh, yeah.
The problem is, he's been used as a weapon before by Amanda Waller, and Zod right now is not in the best mood. So he's taking everyone out. And, Zod sees these other Superman beings trying to help him, which is Eradicator and Cyborg Superman. And as he goes to talk to them about business, now we get the Suicide Squad trying to deal with all the wraiths here. Flag looks like he's about had it. He looks like he's almost dead right now. He's been stabbed. He's just been brutalized. Now the rest of the squad is here, and Amanda Waller is telling them, we need to get this under control. And if you guys don't do that, she says, I swear to God, I will kill you all myself if you don't get this under control. So it's like, well, this offer we can't really refuse now, can we?
Yeah.
But they also notice, and even Katana understands, that her sword, the Soul Taker, is the only one, the only weapon in there that can actually take down these wraiths. Because, well, them being lost souls, Soul Taker, makes sense.
Yeah.
It's a 1+1 thing. Now, when we get the Eradicator, Zod, and Cyborg Superman all talking, they're telling about how they want to take down Superman and what's their plan. And here's where Cyborg Superman messes up. He puts his shoulder on Zod, tells him, everything that we're trying, what you want to do does not matter. We all have a new goal here. Remember, the goal is you help us destroy Superman, and that is an order. And you see Eradicator in the background like, Cyborg, oh, he's trying to tell him, you probably don't want to touch him.
Yeah.
And Zod has this face of, what did you just say, and why are you touching me? He punches the crap out of Cyborg Superman and basically breaks him.
Yeah.
He says, you do not order your general. Cyborg Superman is not in the best shape right now. He's in pieces. And now you get Harley Quinn with a machine gun shooting at these wraiths, but once again, nothing's going to hurt them but the sword. Boomerang's not hurting him. Enchantress isn't hurting them. Croc's not hurting them. Deadshot, no one is able to do anything to these things. And then we get to the next panel, and you see Cyborg Superman saying he's mutilated, and he's trying to put himself back together, but Zod, he's saying, must be stopped, and Eradicator right now can't even stop Zod. See, this is how I feel Superman can take them all down if he just goes berserk on them. Just do what Zod's doing, and he's cool. He can take them down. Now, this is where Amanda Waller's trying to find the brain bomb that Zod threw out, and they're asking her, why are you looking for this? Well, Flag has already came up with the idea. She's trying to look for this because she knows if we put that bomb inside the wall, they'll blow up and the wraiths will go away. Now, the bomb they're talking about is...
it's a kryptonite bomb.
Yeah. And this is only used for Zod and Superman, because anything else really won't hurt them like that.
Yeah.
But this will take care of them, and since all the Phantom Zone, everything in there comes from Krypton, it just makes sense to put that in there. Now, Flag volunteers that he will do it if Katana can open up a hole in there and he can throw it in, everything will be fine. And this is where Harley and Rick Flag have a little heart-to-heart saying she doesn't want him to do it. It's supposed to be with me. And he's like, well, we don't have time for all this, Harley. I know we've had a good time and we've been pretty busy, but I have to do this. And as they're holding each other's hand, then Amanda Waller puts her hand on theirs and says, give it to me. I'll take it. All this is my fault. I tried to use Zod as a weapon, and it didn't end up working, so now I must make up for everything I've done bad. This is where the other Suicide Squad members are in a state of shock, just wondering. She's finally showing that she has imperfections. Captain Boomerang says the world must be coming to an end, because Amanda Waller would never take credit for her faults. She would put it off on us usually to save the day. I don't know what happened here, but she had a change of heart. Well, now Suicide Squad is trying to distract Zod, because he's taking out the Eradicator and Cyborg Superman, and they're thinking to themselves, we need to get out of here because this is getting bad and Zod's going to look crazy, so let's just let the Suicide Squad deal with it. Well, Katana punches a hole in the wall, and she blows back, and this is where they get a chance for Amanda Waller to throw this in there. She's going to dive in it and blow up the whole thing. This is where she starts saying, I let my babies down. I let them down, now I can make up for it. This is I think, why she wanted to do this. Maybe she wanted to end it all and say, I died a hero for my children, because issues previously, her family found out what she actually does, and they did not look up to her as a hero. They looked up to her as a... They looked down on her as a bad guy. She knows she's been doing a lot of wrong things, and it seems like she doesn't care who she has to step on just to get her way. So this is her time for redemption, she really feels. Well, Flag knocks her out and says, you can prove it to them in another way. Consider this payback for putting me in that hole. I'm going to take this one and save the day. So he jumps in there. He has this on him. He says, heck, this is called the Suicide Squad for a reason, and I'm the one soldier that can stop this. Then he starts to see these beings in the distance. Now, Ken, you know a little bit more about the Kryptonian history than I do. Are these people of great importance that's stuck inside the Phantom
Zone? I don't know. I got to look. Hang on.
Is that like the Council, right? Maybe? Inside the Phantom
Zone? If anything, it's more than likely some of Zod's followers, maybe.
Okay. Well, when the bombs begin to go off, you can read here, it says, tick, beep, 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 it's getting ready to go off. But in the far distance, we see these people of high importance. They have on capes, they have on suits. As Ken said, they look like somebody made from Zod's fleet. I'm guessing in here right now, I don't know if he really dies in here, but he might have died in here. They might have been able to protect him, we don't know. But we do see the bomb does go off, and everything's back to normal. The Soul Stealer's still on the ground in perfect condition, but Harley sees that Rick is not there. The Black Vault is gone. And Zod says, you have no idea what you've done. They are gone. I kneel to you. And then this is when Cyber Superman he's back together now. He puts his arm on and says, well, your only hope now is to join us. He says, perhaps, but I do not want to be on no Suicide Squad. This is where he tells Amanda Waller, no one will do that soon enough. From one leader to another, you are in danger to your people. You will never truly know how close you came to destroying all of mankind. I have no doubt that you will succeed eventually. So he does not like Amanda Waller. When Zod tells you he thinks you're worse at doing things than he is,
yeah,
you have a problem. Now, this is where he flies off into the distance, and we'll get to that in Action Comic Books.
Mm-hmm.
But for right now, Rick Flagg's dead, that they think.
That's what it looks like, yeah.
And Harley Quinn is going crazy. She's starting to sing a little song about pudding and everything else.
Wait, starting to go crazy?
She's having a moment. How about that?
Yeah.
but now this is the biggest question that Amanda Waller is now worried about. Since Flagg's gone, who's going to lead my Suicide Squad?
Yeah.
So.
And that's the end of Suicide Squad number 19.
Yep. And we do get a lead in to the next Action Comic Books, and the rest of this will take place in the next Suicide Squad issue, which would be Suicide Squad issue number 20.
So, and then that leads us to Action Comics number 981, and this is The Revenge. Now, this starts off with Superman stuck in the Black Vault. Mm-hmm. Now, when you're in the Black Vault, if you were reading Suicide Squad before and then Action before this, it basically messes with your head the whole time and makes you see whatever your greatest fears are. And for Superman, it's a bunch of zombies attacking, but it's zombies of everybody he's ever known and ever worked with and ever tried to save or was able to, was not able to. You get Lois and John. His parents are in here. Perry's in here.
Kryptonian parents are in here.
His Kryptonian parents.
Friends, or not friends, Kryptonian, trying to think of the word I'm looking for here. Just Kryptonian beings that were on his plan that he probably never even met unless it was inside the Fortress of Solitude. He's seeing visions of them because he feels he failed them when the planet blew up. Just everybody from his past is coming back to really try to bite him in the butt.
And basically what they're doing, they're not trying to eat him or anything. They're telling him the whole time that you failed us. You couldn't save us. Mm-hmm. It's basically
just the guilt.
All of his internal fears that no one ever knows about is coming back to haunt him right now.
And as we said before, that's the main way you can get to Superman is through the people he loves.
Mm-hmm. So he's trying to fight him off, saying, "No, wait, this couldn't have happened. None of this could be right." And then all of a sudden, there's an explosion, and he's and you get his internal monologue about how he couldn't save them. It's starting to actually get to him. He's starting to believe this a little bit, which is what the Black Vault does.
Mm-hmm.
And till finally, during the explosion, you see a crater in the floor, Amanda Waller and the guards around him, and they couldn't believe. Wait, what's Superman doing here? So obviously, this is right after the Black Vault is destroyed.
Suicide Squad freed Superman. That's another thing that they should chalk up to thank them for.
Well, while he's half out of it and laying on the floor, Amanda Waller says that inside the Black Vault, he must have been inside the Black Vault just as it dissolved, probably with no idea whatsoever that General Zod is on the loose.
Yeah, if he finds that out, Superman's going to be highly upset.
The next thing you see, Zod, out in the swamp with Eradicator and the Cyborg Superman, they're trying to talk him into working with them. And as they were trying before, he's talking about how he doesn't follow anybody. His number one priority is to get all of his people out of the Phantom Zone to bring his army back. Because all of his followers and stuff were sent to the Phantom Zone with him. I think that's who we were seeing in the trying to get out of the Black Vault.
Now, if they're still trying to get out the Black Vault, I'm pretty sure they've been there long enough to come up with some plans. As I said, I just truly don't feel Rick Flagg's dead. After what happened with Captain Boomerang, with the Black Vault, thought he died. Mm-hmm. He really didn't. And Deadshot turning his back on the team and coming back to the team, I don't think that... For now, I don't think any Suicide Squad members might die yet.
Yeah. Well, this whole thing is the Eradicator and Cyborg Superman trying to tell him, is like, we need to take out Kal-El.
Mm-hmm.
And the Eradicator, for him, it's because of the restoration of Krypton's purity.
Yes.
For the Eradicator, we know it's because of he blames Superman for what happened to his wife and to his life in general.
Not Eradicator, Cyborg Superman.
Yeah, Cyborg Superman. It's because of what happened to his wife and his family and everybody else and how he blames Superman for all of it, for losing them all, for becoming the Cyborg Superman.
Mm-hmm.
But you have them talking back and forth, and they find out that he's like, they're telling Zod that we can actually get your people out. We can get the Phantom Zone projector. He's like, wait a minute, how can you get a Phantom Zone projector?
Easy.
Like, well, don't worry about it. You're a general. We know where it's at. We take out Kal-El, then we can go get the projector. And he's talking about, and Zod tells him straight up, wait a minute, I come up with the plans. I'm the general. Mm-hmm. You follow me. It's not the other way around. Then we move back to Bel-Rev. Superman starts to come too. And they're trying to say, Superman, wake up, looks like the Black Vault collapsed.
He's a little distorted here, and she has Black Vault had the quiet number on you, and he says, no kidding. She says, I do understand that it took a hell out of anyone, but for even you, this is a big fleet. And he says everything's getting so loud because there's an alarm going off. And that was something I was wondering as I was reading this. I'm thinking to myself, Superman is a little dizzy, and he can hear anything, anywhere, really.
Yeah.
So once he gets all his hearing back, sounds probably going to come at him like it did when he was hitting puberty.
Well, he's worn out right now, so he has no control over super hearing.
No.
So he's hearing this as super loud.
And he's just really out of it at this point.
Uh-huh.
They
finally shut off the alarms.
Yeah, and that's when he starts to come to. He can have a little bit of peace and quiet inside of his head.
And that's when one of the guards walks up and says straight up that, Director Waller, we still can't find Zod. We have nowhere near where he's gone.
Did you say Zod?
That wakes up Superman a little bit. He's like, wait a minute. Did you say Zod? He was here?
I love his reaction.
Now, the best thing is Waller doesn't back down. Yes, he was under my control. Superman says, why? To act as the ultimate weapon, of course, even against you if necessary. And Superman, all he says is, your tactics are deplorable, and he takes off.
Yeah.
To go after Zod. He realizes that, no, Zod cannot stay free.
Yeah, and this is one thing Justly deals with Amanda Waller. Like, when will you learn you cannot use weapons against weapons? It just sometimes doesn't work that way.
Well, Amanda tries to make the point right here, though, also as he's leaving, that her job is not to do the right thing or do the popular thing. Hers is to save people. Keep them safe. That's her job. Now, sometimes that means she has to kill somebody. Sometimes it's you got to let someone die.
Or a lot of people.
That's the way it works.
But see, when she's using a weapon like this, or using Zod as a weapon that backfires on her, well, now a lot more people might die, Amanda. What are you going to do? Now call the other weapon in that you were trying to protect. It's a loophole.
Yeah. Well,
they're not a loophole. It's just a loop going and going, and she'll never learn.
Exactly. Next page we get up, it's Cyborg, Eradicator, and Zod flying along again. Zod's asking, where are we going? And they're going to the moon base where the Superman Revenge Squad has been based at. One of Batman's actual secret moon bases that they commandeered. Now, Zod says, he asks Cyborg straight up, well, what do you get out of this, after all this? And he says he gets revenge for his wife. Then the Eradicator comes up with, Kal-El has disgraced his house and all of Krypton by diluting his bloodline. Krypton's purity must be reignited, which we know means because he's married to Lois and actually had a son with Lois.
Right, and that's where I think Zod's going to use this as his advantage.
Zod says straight up, bloodline, what are you saying? Because Zod doesn't know about Superman having a wife or a son. But as they're about to explain something, then the Cyborg, wait a minute, someone's coming, and before he even could say coming, Superman blasts through and hits all three of them at the same time. So then we get the battle. Now this is awesome, a battle in Superman, because it's Superman versus three of his most strongest foes.
And guys, if you're a Superman fan out there, you gotta get this panel shot right here. You got all these S's in the sky, and then this black cape of Zod's. It's just a nice shot to me.
Yeah. And of course, there's a news camera sitting right there.
Always a news camera. You know, if I was a news camera by, I don't know, anyone like a Flash, and you're in the sky, or heck, even Batman, I would not want to be filming anything around Superman and his villains. No, that's a cause for death.
I film and start zooming in as you're flying away.
Exactly. It's like, okay, bye-bye. There's four capes flying around the sky. Don't want any part of that.
Well, Zod keeps mentioning how Superman is actually... seems like he's slowed, he's lazy, all these things. The problems with him being raised on Earth and not on Krypton is what Zod's bringing up. And as they're fighting, Superman's trying everything he can, because you gotta remember, the three of these guys are pretty much on power with him already.
This is Superman taking on three different Supermans.
Yes. Now, what?
Notification here.
Yeah. But we also see, at the same time, we see people from around the planet...
Superman's allies.
Other Supermen and super family.
Yeah, the
watching this.
Super.
You
family.
Get a panel of Supergirl in National City with Cat Grant over her shoulder, talking about Superman. He needs help. In upstate from Metropolis, you get Lois and Jonathan on the train coming back to Metropolis, still arguing about the move to Metropolis.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get basically watching the battle on their phone. Then you get back to them, the fight with Zod and Superman, and then you see Lex in Metropolis watching the battle on TV, saying, "Mercy, cancel my appointments for the day." And then finally, the cyborg blasts Superman and basically just about knocks him out, and Zod grabs him before he can fall. But not before Kenan Kong from Shanghai, the new Superman, sees what's going on and asks, "Dr. Omen, how long does it take to get to America again?"
Now, this is, I just want to cut in real quick, if you don't mind here. There's a revenge squad for Superman. This gave me hope to say Superman will not be fighting alone.
No, this, not at the end of this book, but it looks like they're putting together, there's going to be a team coming.
And the two characters, I was a little sad not seeing here, but I don't really know what's going on in the books. You read them more than I do.
Okay.
Does Superwoman have her powers back yet?
Not yet, but she, kind of.
Okay.
They have a she has a power suit right now that was built by John Henry and Natasha.
Okay, that's what I was wondering.
That actually simulate or basically has all the powers that she had.
We might be able to still see her.
So we're not there. Yeah, we haven't got to that part yet.
I'm still going to count on her to come in somewhere.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Anybody who has worn an S or is wearing an S
seems to be tuning into this
in the current DC universe is going to show up.
Mm-hmm.
So including probably Crypto.
Oh, hey, Crypto. We already seen what he did to Eradicator.
Yeah. So, the whole time the Zod is talking smash about how you're so inferior. You should have been trained as a warrior, not as a one of these weaklings from this planet. You're a pathetic Earth creature to be put down like a dog. And Superman gets smashed right into the middle of the street and smashes. They look down through the ground where he was at, and he's not there.
Yeah.
Zod says straight up, he's a coward, he ran. So they all take off for the moon, and everybody's like, wait a minute. And then you see everybody's like, wait a minute, what happened? And Superman says straight up, hey, I hated to run. But from the he can follow Henshaw's heartbeat and the construct of his armor and stuff from anywhere. He needs to get away now, regroup, figure out what's going on.
Because there's no way right now he knew he was going to win.
Well, he lands at the Kent Farm in Hamilton County at the same time that Lois and Jonathan start walking up.
By the way, and in these panels right now, as he's getting ready to get lower to the ground, he's holding his head. He knows that black belt really did a number on him.
He's still not recovered from it yet. But he lands, and Lois and Jonathan run up to him. Lois is telling him straight up, you're hurt. And Superman says, the black belt did something to me, something bad. And Lois says, well, tell us what it is. Show us. That's what I'm trying to tell you. It's my eyes. I'm blind, is the last page.
Oh, boy.
So Superman is blind after the Black Vault.
That's not good.
No, it's not.
That's really not good.
And that's the end of Action Comics 981. And the next thing up, according to this, is Darkness Falls. But like we said, since they made a point to show Supergirl, the new Superman, and Lex,
mm-hmm.
and who was the... Jonathan.
Yes.
So I have a feeling together they're going to be working against the Superman Revenge Squad.
Yeah, so you're going to have Superboy, Supergirl, the new Superman.
And Lex.
What do we call Super Lex?
I don't know.
I just thought about it. We don't have a name for him yet.
He calls himself Superman.
He does. That's what I was going to say. Superman. I'm like, we have Superman. The real Superman coming back now. He is here. So mm-hmm. I'm going to call him Super Lex for now. Guys, okay. Just to identify you of who he is. But the next one we have... now, I'm not going to touch on this too much. It's just something I want to go
over. Yeah, we're getting into classics, which... Oh, you got... Okay, yeah, Flash. I forgot we were going to do that one. Let me pull out Flash. I have it here.
Now, this is the 21st century... Oh, let me tell you which book this is, guys. Sorry about that. This is the Flash issue number 24, featuring the Green Lantern. Plus, Kid Flash and Reverse Flash. There's a lot of different characters in here, guys.
And just like 2 weeks ago, it was awesome seeing Barry and Hal working together.
Oh, like I said, that splash page of them together, we need that as a screensaver. We need that as a poster. Well, this is going on with covering what we had in the 23rd issue. When they opened up the door of... the West House, this was Iris and Wallace walking into the house, and who was sitting on their couch as they're talking about the Reverse Flash from the New 52 comic books.
Yeah, young Wally was actually talking about his dad being the Reverse Flash.
Mm-hmm. And once they opened the door, a voice heard them say, Reverse Flash, I'm sorry, but I'm the only Reverse Flash. It was Ichabod Thawne, the real Reverse Flash, finally coming back.
Who, in the last 2 months, has been dead and alive at least two or three times.
Yeah, it's... Deuce has a pretty big reincarnation here, back and forth with death. As he said, I've died before and I keep coming back. Flash knows he cannot keep that guy down. Well, anyways, in the 25th century, there was a power they called, because it had so much more than just that. The way the Flash uses his speed force to be a hero shows us that he can use it as a blessing. And the speed force is more than power. It's hope and it's made real. But with all blessings in the multiverse, there's also have to be a cost, a burden to a blessing, an opposite, a negative.
Now, we know that the Ichabod Thawne feeds off the negative speed force.
Right.
And that's what they're talking about there.
So, he's always going to... From what I'm getting from this, as long as Barry's there, you're always going to have Reverse Flash.
Yeah.
Which is going to kind of scare me of how this is going to end. Anyways, they were still fighting. What was this guy? He can multiply himself. Multiplex.
Yeah, Multiplex.
We all know what happened with him in the last one. He was a crazy ex. Well, he actually wasn't even an ex.
He's a stalker.
Yeah. But here's where the story really gets thick. At the West House. Now, Iris and Wally are seeing Reverse Flash sitting on her couch. He tells Iris to run, and he shoots the speed force power at Thawne. Nothing's going to work. He gets in front of Iris before she heads out the door. He reflects Kid Flash Blast. He says, you know you're not hurting me, but you're new.
Yeah, that's the interesting part is in this, Ichabod Thawne, he knows all the past.
Yes.
He doesn't know who this Wally West is.
No, he's looking at him saying, your name's Wallace West, you're new.
Obviously, something has changed since he started time traveling.
Yep, he says, something I missed out while I've been in the Speed Force. And I was hoping you would help me fill in the blanks. And he says, basically, Iris hasn't changed at all. He says he's still figuring also that she's still West, not Mrs. Allen. Well, this is when Kid Flash puts on his suit and he says, oh, here it is. Tell me something. What kind of Kid Flash are you?
This is awesome because of some of the references. The first reference they make, I loved it.
He says, are you impulsive? As he knees Wally in the chest. And then the next one... Now, this is while Flash is doing the same move that he taught Wally West. Now, he needs to take down Multiplex, as Multiplex is multiplying so fast. Flash says, we got to find the original one. But Multiplex says, I've been doing this for so long, I don't know which one of me is the original one. So, this is when Wally says, Barry says to himself, okay, I got something for him. And he's going to use, like, an ultimate power to take him down. Same thing that he's taught Wally West, but on a smaller scale.
Yeah.
And this is where Thawne tells him.
Well, I was distracted for half a second when they said the kind that's lost in the flash of shadow. You know who that reference was, don't you?
No, I do not.
That's actually a reference to Wally West in the 90s. A lot of the Wally West when he was as the Flash, a lot of the storylines they did in the early 90s with Mark Waid was him trying to figure out who is he. And him trying to live up to who Barry was.
But he didn't need to live up to who Barry was.
He needed to be his own Flash, but it took him a little while to figure that out.
I do remember that, but I didn't...
That's what the whole reference to living in the shadow of the Flash.
Okay, that makes sense. That didn't click to me at the time. Yeah. It's like, what, that, I don't know. But
that's the difference between I was a reader of Flashback then, yeah, and you were not even old enough to read yet. I just
know stories. Yeah, literally. But now, he tells Reverse Flash, oh, I got something for you. The Flash taught me this. And basically, he touches him, and it's like this big Speed Force lightning bolt that goes off. And he says, oh, a mini burst. I admit that was quite unique, but we both know you're just the fake Kid Flash.
Yeah.
He's not the real. And I love that because he says, hell, you're not even the real Wally West. And that was one of the things that got me with this Wally West when I first read the Rebirth, or not Rebirth, I'm sorry, New 52. I'm like, wait a minute, why is there a new Wally? Where's my old Wally? Now, this is also where we see Flash doing the same exact thing to Multiplex. But he doesn't touch him. He gives him a full-on slap palm on the chest.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the same thing that Wally did, but this is on a way bigger scale. It's like they had a mini bomb exploded.
Yeah.
So this takes out any other fake Multiplex, and the real ones don't be the only one left alive. Now we get back to what's going on with Wallace and Thawne here. Thawne's breaking Wally West's leg, and he says, oh, I see the Speed Force is working on you pretty good. You're healing really fast. But what would happen if I broke your leg again? And I think he does this repeatedly, honestly, until Iris gets up and says, I've had enough of this. Stop hurting him. And then this is where Thawne tells him, I suppose, I'm surprised most of all from you, after everything your father, your brother put you through, how could you let a man like this into your home? She says, what are you talking about? Excuse me? Oh, now that's an interesting twist. You don't know who the Flash really is yet, do you? And then we get Hal talking to Barry, trying to talk him through everything that he's doing with Iris, and should he tell who Iris is, that would probably be better for her, but then again, that could put her in danger. He's just being the buddy there for him when he needs. They have a good little talk. Hal goes back into space, and then this is where, Barry starts thinking, life can be short or it can be long. That was the whole discussion Hal was giving him. Most people can see the glass half full, half empty. They see life as being long or short. What are you? And he says, Barry says, when I was a kid, my father always gave me a watch telling me how to read, and every second is a gift. So time is very valuable. Life is very important. It's time that he lets Iris in on his life. Maybe it can feel like a longer life with her in there.
Yeah.
Well, once he opens the door, you see Wally broken and battered, and he says, Barry, the Speed Force is trying to heal me, but something went wrong. And then he says, Wally, are you hurt? He says, where's Iris? Kid Flash tells him, Thawne left you a message. And he looks on the wall, and it's, I don't know what he wrote this in. It looks like blood. You know where I live. And of course, we all know when he says that, Barry says, it's not so much where he lives, it's when. And this is when they go to the 25th century with Iris. Thawne's there, and he says, do you remember any of this? Any of this perhaps jog your memory? He grabs a random man, and he vibrates his hand through the guy's head. Same way Iris was killed. Was it the 80s that this happened?
I don't remember.
But in the comic books back in the day, Iris did die on the hands of Thawne. He vibrated his hand through her head and killed her. And he says, oh, that must not be jogging your memory. Well, let me try this again. He gets her. He says, oh, I have a gift for you to remember your past life. He grabs her by the mouth, grabs her by the throat then, and moves on to proceed to try to kill her. He says, maybe if I do this to you, you will remember when I killed you. And then we get in Color of Fear, Part 2, Run for Your Life, in Issue 25.
Yes. So it's interesting what's going on and trying to figure out. It's more stuff back from Rebirth.
Yeah.
Because this is something that he's now, and it figures the Speedsters, who work through time and stuff, are the only ones that are figuring out that there's problems here and there and cracks in the multiverse.
And the only other two people that are evil, even understanding something's off, is Superman from everything that's happened to him, and then Batman because of what's going on with the button.
But exactly.
Besides that, the only one that can actually tap into this is Barry Allen.
Yeah.
Well, I guess we're seeing Reverse Flash now, but I don't think he's doing this to help anyone besides benefit himself. But we will see how dark this goes and how deep this can get. Hopefully Iris doesn't die again.
Well, moving on from there, we got two more we're going to do. I'm going to go real quick through Detective 958. Because there's some cool stuff that was in here, and this is actually the start of an Azrael story.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the nice thing is, the Detective in the last couple of months and weeks has been, it seems like doing a lot more of single-character stories with the other characters as just bonuses to them. We've had a lot of Orphan and her backstory.
Orphan, yeah.
A lot of we had a story arc with Stephanie. A spoiler. We had a story arc of of Batwoman with Colony.
I can't remember. Wasn't Batwing pretty heavily also
he was brought in after some of that.
Yeah.
So, but this is more of a, it's an Azrael story, but it's more of a team story on this.
Yeah, it feels more just what it was when it first started.
Exactly.
And we haven't really had too much from Clayface. I understand he's not really a Bat family member.
We will. Yeah, he is. He is now.
He is now, but before he wasn't. Now he's definitely in there, and I want to see some more with him. I feel like he's been put in the back burner as of late.
Well, this starts off, we see a guy bleeding going up to an arena, and you see that it's the Gotham City Guardians playing basketball. And it's basically Jean-Paul and Lucas sitting there front courtside watching the game and talking about Lucas has this new app on his computer that can predict everything that's going on. And Kate is there with them. Yeah. So they're watching the game, and as this furry little dude who looks kind of like a really short Sasquatch...
Yeah.
Comes stumbling into the arena, says Azrael. And anybody who knows Azrael from back in the day, way back in the beginning, remembers Nomos. He was actually a guy who works with the Order of Saint Dumas to help train and take care of Azrael. So, but as soon as he starts stumbling in, he says, help me. And then Jean-Paul tells Lucas, can you black out the stadium now? Lucas's like, yeah, but so as soon as they black it out, he goes in, grabs Nomos, and carries him out. So no one can see what happened. Then we get to the new Iceberg Lounge.
For a lot of people, they would think the Sasquatch existed.
Well, next we get the new Iceberg Lounge in Gotham City Harbor. Well,
good old Penguin's back.
That's right. And it's not Batman going to see Penguin, it's Bruce Wayne.
Exactly.
They're going to see, because they, and this whole thing is, he wants to talk to some girl. No one knows what this is. He comes to Penguin, and Penguin basically talks him in, what he thinks, talks him into a high-stakes poker game.
Mm-hmm. Which Batman will not sweat on. He has a poker face.
Well, we get back to the Belfry, and you see Orphan and this really old guy basically performing Shakespeare together. You find out that it's Clayface. And Clayface has been working with Orphan and doing, and he's loving the fact that she's been helping out, and he's able to actually still do his acting, even if it's just the two of them.
Yeah, that's what his bread and butter was before he became Clayface, was acting. That's all he wanted to do, was become a stage actor, then a film actor.
Well, at that time, you get Lucas and Jean-Paul and Kate coming in with Nomos on a stretcher.
You guys, that's just what? It's the other page right there, the dialogue between Clayface and Nomos.
Yeah. Well, Clayface says, whoa, who's the little guy? Nomos looks at him and just says, screw you. He's dying and bleeding out on a stretcher.
I don't know why that made me laugh.
Clayface says, he's feisty. Yeah. So you go back, talking back and forth, and they got all the scanners. The problem is, Nomos looks up and sees the Azrael suit, and he starts flipping out about that, and now he's hurting himself. Wait a minute, let me see. Oh, yeah, this goes all across this way. He looks up, it looks like, well, they find out that he looks like he's been impaled by something huge. He should be dead by now. And Azrael, or Jean-Paul, tells him a little bit about Nomos. It says, he was created by the Sacred Order of Saint Dumas. He's a bit more resilient than the average man, so he was actually created by them. That's when Nomos looks up, sees the Azrael suit, says, no, get away from me, get it away. And they have no idea why he's flipping out. And Nomos says straight up, you know that's not, he says it's just a costume, is what Lucas says. He says, you know that's not true, Mr. Fox. You know Azrael's suit of sorrows is much more than just a costume, so get it out of here. And then as he passes out, then we find out that Lucas has actually been testing Azrael's suit and figure out what's going on with it, because it actually has its own artificial intelligence that helps rewrite whoever's wearing it.
Mm-hmm. As we say, it's basically they get possessed almost by the suit.
Mm-hmm. So then we go a little bit more into how they created Azrael's. Because each Azrael is a clone of their previous Azrael. And raised by Mother, which we've seen in other comics or Detective coming up in the past. Because Mother, remember, had something to do with Orphan's past too, didn't she? Yep. So,
when they said Mother at first, I really thought that was her mother. Threw me off there for a second.
Yeah. Let me see if they... I don't remember. I think there was some more stuff about Nomos in here.
Yeah, I think so, right there.
But it's basically all backstory on the way Azrael was created.
Mm-hmm.
But we get up and they find out from Nomos here that there's actually the problem with Azrael is eventually their human side overcomes the programming.
Mm-hmm.
and they leave.
Right.
And that's when they have to start a new Azrael.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the Order of Saint-Dumas has finally, someone finally took over and figured out a way that, you know what, we got a way that the human side will never take over. They've removed the human element of it.
Yeah, this is something I felt like, hey, you know what, we're in the 21st century here, guys. We have technology, you know?
They built an Azrael android.
Mm-hmm.
And the person who did this basically said, you know what, the Order is too sick to survive and has set the android loose to destroy the Order of Saint-Dumas.
Well, we'll see how good this goes.
And then we get back to the high-stakes poker game, and you go through and you find the people sitting around the table. Some of them are kind of interesting.
Very interesting.
You get Harry Day Jr., who's a former TV star with... Now, this is what Bruce Wayne's seeing in his contact lenses.
Mm-hmm.
Harry Day Jr., former movie star, 3 drug arrests last month. Funky Flashman, talent promoter, currently under investigation by the IRS. Maximum Tyrell, CEO of Fantoma X Records, violating his parole from LA County right now.
Right now.
You also get Drury Walker, a.k.a. the Killer Moth, not a threat.
No one cares about Killer Moth.
And then you get a guy that's all question marks, and no one knows who he is.
That guy's really strange.
Yeah. Well, if you read the stuff with Nomos earlier, you find out that there is someone in the city that was trying to get away.
Yeah, and from what he's wearing...
He looks like a monk.
A little red cult.
Yeah.
Monk.
Hood. You find out,
he's weird.
Yeah, he's basically one of the Order of Saint-Dumas monks. So they're sitting there playing poker, and Bruce sits in and starts talking to the guy and finds out that this guy is basically experiencing everything because he knows he's not going to live long.
Mm-hmm.
So he wanted to play poker. He's got the penguin setting up dates for him for tonight and all these other things. And then people start then they're like, well, guys, it's time to put a break in the game for tonight's entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what Bruce came here to find this person.
And we've been waiting to see this person, too.
Exactly. And they say that she's the best in the world. And Bruce says, she is.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's an explosion out of nowhere. They're trying to figure out, what is this? And the monk starts going nuts. Oh, no, I thought I had more time. Oh, no. As they do, the Azrael android breaks through the wall. It starts coming at them. But right behind it, out of nowhere, you see someone speak Teg Yave, which is backwards for get heavy.
Mm-hmm.
And anybody knows magic in the DC universe, there's only at the moment one person who speaks magic backwards. And then the clone gets sucked into the floor, and you see Zatanna has shown up. She's who was performing at the lounge.
She's back.
That's right. So we get to bring Zatanna back in, and that's actually the end of it. And then, all written backwards, you get To Be Continued at the bottom. And that's Detective Comics 958.
Yeah. That was a great ending.
It is good to see Zatanna back in all of her glory.
Mm-hmm.
And now we got the last one. This one is the first of the series of Dark Days books that are coming this summer.
Mm-hmm.
This one's Dark Days The Forge. I believe the next one is going to be Dark Days Metal. And that comes in July.
Next month.
So you want to start on this one, and I'll go as we go?
We're both going to... Yeah, I'll start, because some things in here I was a little confused.
Some of the characters I'm happy to see that are in this.
Oh, yeah. But the way this is being told, I was a little confused here. And do we actually know when this is taking...
The beginning of this is actually from the journal, so it could be at any point in the past.
Well, once we get to there, I'll ask
in the beginning
for this. But right now, we're in some... It looks like ancient Egypt. And there's been something they've been feeling getting more and more great. When you feel the veins channeling through your heart and starts pounding, beating, and you start discovering... Well, the guy is saying all this is Carter Hall, and everybody
knows.
Yeah,
this is from the diary of Carter Hall.
Yes.
Now, anybody who doesn't know, Carter Hall is Hawkman.
Mm-hmm. And he has many lives. Him and Hawkwoman.
Yes.
They've had many lives.
And they go
lives.
Through that in this.
But this was when they were back in their Egyptian times of old. Now, is this their first lives, actually?
This is actually, yes, because this is where they encounter Nth Metal for the first time.
Okay. So this is their first encounter with Nth Metal,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, these guys are racing through the desert.
Yep.
And then this alien spaceship crash lands from above them.
Yeah. And now we're on the Bermuda Triangle. This is taking place as of right now.
And there's a volcano going off.
And there's tremors just going everywhere, and they're getting worse, and they don't know how much time they got before it actually causes destruction to everything. Something's wrong with the metal.
Mm-hmm.
Then you see this hand come out of lava, and it turns out it's Batman's suit. He's telling the doctor.
Yeah, he's got a giant mechanical suit that he's actually came out of the lava with.
Yes, this is supposed to be protecting him for now, but I think it's only a temporary time. He says, get in here. I'm loving Aquaman's new look, by the
yeah.
way. This is where he says, I'm getting out here, and the thing is collapsing. Then we get to see Aquaman come to help Batman with this doctor. And he says, Batman, you gotta come with me. That suit's not gonna hold up against that lava. He says, I can't leave yet. There.
He has to get all the information from the research station.
Yes.
You find out that that's actually a black site, Wayne Enterprises' black site that no one knows. It's totally off the books. No one knew it was there, including Aquaman.
Yes, and this is in his sea.
Yes.
Now, he is the king to sea. He can't figure out how he never detected this, and why is Batman doing something behind his back in his own water. And Batman tells him basically some things you can't understand, but just know Atlantis is that, and really questions you want to ask the questions that you want to ask me. So I guess there's things about Aquaman's sea that he doesn't even know that Batman does,
uh-huh.
which is kind of scary. Really,
yeah.
really scary.
Well, Batman's secrets have secrets, remember?
They do. That really spooks.
We find that out here.
Yeah. Yeah.
Next up, we get to go to Mogo, which is the home of the Green Lantern Corps,
mm-hmm.
and you get Ganthet. Has called Hal Jordan for a special mission off of everything else because he has his own mission for him that no one else is allowed to know about. And he says straight up that there's rumblings in every corner of the universe, whispers of the stirring in the dark. A terrible truth is coming to light on your home planet, and we must not let it. Kyle. Hal looks at the coordinates and says, wait a minute, these coordinates, is this the source of the threat? Then Ganthet says, is there a problem? He's like, no problem at all, as he flies to Wayne Manor.
So the source of all their problems are at one of his friend's house in the Justice League, and he didn't know about this.
Exactly.
Why is it at the source of Bruce's house?
So he gets into the cave. At that point, he's attacked by Duke.
Yes.
Who still does not have a code name, because that is actually spoken of in here.
Yeah, this is where Hal basically picks him up and is like, although, to be fair, Duke did give Hal Jordan a bloody mouth.
Uh-huh.
He's got him pretty good with the kick. He says, kid, who are you? What do you think you're doing? He says, who are you? You supposed to be Batman's new Robin or something? He's like, no, I'm not Robin. I don't have a code name yet.
Yeah.
He's like, well, who are you, kid? Tell me. He's like, well, I'm Duke Thomas. He picks him up and he's just holding him around like, well, you're going to help me come scan the Batcave right now. And I'm trying to figure out what's going on here. He's like, well, Batman said not to let anyone in, and I can't do that for you. And he's like, what are you doing? He's like, oh, never mind, I already found it. And he's like, wait, come back here. You can't do this. Now, this is where we get to see at...
at this point, and he's like, you're coming with me, as Hal goes through... Looks like a holographic section of the cave.
Yes, it's basically like how...
Passes into a hidden passage inside the hidden Batcave.
The best way I can describe it, have you guys ever seen like those little scary movies or horror movies, or detective movies, when they're on a wall and they're trying to find a secret soft spot on the wall, and it's like, once I press this button on the wall or pull maybe this book down from a bookcase, another wall will open.
Uh-huh.
Well,
this one, he just walks right through the wall.
Yes, it's basically like it's a holographic wall that's been there.
Mm-hmm.
It's really not a wall at all, it seems to be. Well, now we go to campus, 1 mile beneath Philadelphia, and this is where we get to see Duke's mother that is still crazy off the Joker toxins. She's completely batty now. But who are these characters? This is something I had no clue.
The Immortal Men.
The Immortal Men. I don't
know. Now, the Immortal Men is a very lesser-known group in DC Comics. I've heard of them. I've never read them. Give me a minute. I will look them up, though.
I'm going to say, if you want to take this part out, I'll look them up. That'll work, because I don't know really what's going on here now. but the Immortal Men are having...
The Immortal Men...
There, I'm having a conversation with everything that's happened in the past.
Let you search them.
And now what's happening in the future, and they see everything that Mr. Thomas... Now, when they
Miss
see,
Thomas was Duke's Miss Thomas. Mother.
Mrs.
Thomas, she was reactivated briefly a few weeks ago. I've been monitoring to make sure that she hasn't revealed anything she shouldn't have to anybody she shouldn't have. So she's actually someone that's worked with them in the past, obviously.
And what all did they tell her? She's actually have more importance
than I thought.
It
doesn't say. She's still incapable of divulging any of their secrets. Their secrecy is paramount. It will be up to the Immortal Men to preserve mankind's future if any of them live long enough to see it. Then we get back to the Journal of Carter Hall. And he talks about how basically the the gist of this is telling the history of who is Hawkman and Hawkwoman and their enemy, which in this one, it is Half Set. The three of them, now anybody who knows the Hawk storyline has, they came in contact with the Nth Metal and it basically made them immortal. But not standard immortal. But they basically just get reincarnated over and over and over again.
Yeah, which, you know, kind of can suck after a couple lifetimes. Yeah. But it'll happen again.
So then we move on to... now, well, you get to see... Wait a minute, let me see the... Let me read exactly where this is at. But he's like, after so many times of being reincarnated, he actually... they would... Before they were reborn again, they would actually catch glimpses of something bigger... A mystery behind the lives and their story, something terrifying, something on the scale I'd never seen before. A dream, no, not a dream, a nightmare echoing through the metal. And you see this huge, it looks like statue of Batman with these bodies tied to the legs.
Yeah, it's like something out of an apocalyptic world.
And
this is terrible.
And then Carter wakes up, and he's, so I began following the mystery on my own. Something I told no one, about not till now, and here in these pages, and he looks to the wall, and you see his mace standing there.
Yes.
Then you get to the Lunar Batcave, and Batman's teleporting in, and he's talking to Lucius.
Yeah.
Blacklight, no, what'd you find? Did you find the Immortal Man?
Yeah, I did.
How about the Immortal Men?
See, that's the thing, I only found the Immortal Man. I didn't find anything about the men, but the Immortal Man, same ability that the Hawk people have, he can reincarnate instantly when he dies. So his name and his appearance change time of every reincarnation. So
anyway. Okay.
Also, I want to say here, once we get to the moon base, this is a different artist on this. I don't know who it is. Is this Snyder's art? Because it's like a completely different
art. Well, Snyder doesn't do the art, I don't think.
Okay. Well, this is
At the end here, we'll have a full list of rundown of everybody that did this book.
But
it's like I said, it's a who's who.
Mm-hmm. It's switched on us, definitely. I think this...
I know you were excited to see this next page, though, after this.
Oh, yeah.
But you get Batman on the thing, talking to Lucius, telling him that Blackside 14 is down. He wants to Site 15 up and running within a week, to keep this one away from the oceans. And he's going to actually upload all the information, geological data, from the Blackside that he's had for comparison. So then someone behind him says, so it was as bad as you thought it would be? And Batman throws batarangs.
And he throws batarangs at T-Spheres.
Exactly.
Mr. Terrific's back, guys.
Yeah. I didn't know he was in another world of the multiverse.
Yeah.
According to this, he's been in another world investigating something for Batman.
Yeah, so this is one reason why we haven't seen him. This explains.
Mm-hmm.
But his T-Spear, he says, Batman, my T-Spheres never did anything to you. This is where he says, you need to get back on task, Michael. How was the universe? And he says, the mystery of what is yours has made me a little questiony about everything I've been doing as of lately. But Mr. Terrific seems to keep all of his promises and all the data that I could gather from around the world. And Batman asks him, you haven't told anybody, right? No one on either Earth, correct? And then this is where Mr. Terrific shows what's on his arm, on his jacket, fair play. When fair play is written, that means I keep my promises. And also, I'm not stupid enough to go back on a promise I made to the Batman.
Yeah.
This is when he says, Batman tells him, you're looking at the big picture here. To be honest, Mr. Terrific says, Batman, I have no idea. I have an IQ of 179, but I've never seen anything like this. I have no idea what it is. Maybe you can tell me what is actually going on. Batman starts to smile a little bit. Which is a little creepy.
Yeah.
this is where Mr. Terrific asks him, so did I miss something? What's going on here? Batman tells him, yes, you did. It will all be here, all the leads. Me, there might not be any coming back. And Michael, I'm going to need you to do something for me while I follow the path to the end. I've already extracted the molecules I need from his body.
Who's from his body? Yeah.
Yeah, who are they talking about? And then Mr. Terrific says... Who are you talking about? What is it? What's going on here? Batman puts in the combination. He says, it's time to let him out of his box. Once they open up the door, it's like this time bomb, but it is in the shape of...
It looks almost like a football on end.
Yeah, and the logo, I don't even know if the logo, the shape is like a diamond, and the color is red, and it's black with the yellow diamond on there. I tried to describe to you, probably not the best way, guys, but this is basically Plastic Man if he was in the shape of an atomic bomb. That's what it looks like.
See, I wasn't reading comics when Plastic Man came back into DC full on.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know what he was like in DC then.
And also, I'm getting I'm on the website that tells you where what every character was in here, and it is confirmed Plastic Man was in the book. So
awesome.
It is Plastic Man. Now, I don't understand really what's going on with this. They do say, sorry, I'm going back here, but I'm trying to figure out. He said we may need to let him out of the box for his molecules, right?
No, it's just time to let him out of the box. He's already got Batman already extracted what he needed.
Now, everybody knows Plastic Man is a shapeshifter. He can
turn
to anything you want. He can literally become a plane to being a beach ball that you throw around.
Yeah.
So I don't know what exactly Batman's using him for, but what he's hooked up into, I have no idea how this is even going to keep him compact. Maybe it's something that freezes him. I can't wait, but Plastic Man's back. I'm glad to see Mr. Terrific, too.
Yeah.
Now we go back to the Batcave, and this is where Hal and Duke are at, and he says something seriously is going on in this cave I didn't know about. My ring's on the fritz. And you hear this voice, this eerie voice in the background saying, oh, I can clear this all up for you. And they're like, what the heck am I hearing here? Something weird is going on. And Duke says, I didn't say anything. And then Hal's like, well, that wasn't me or my ring.
Yeah, that's when Hal asked the ring for how many life signatures are ahead, and the ring can't read anything, and it's fritzing out on him. It's not even able to talk right.
Yeah, and Hal's like, this makes no sense. And then the voice says again, it wouldn't, would it? A mystery never does at first. And then this is where they're like, what, it's a mystery? I don't want no mystery. The voice once again says, oh, yes, our friend with the pointy ears has been following it for years now. And then Duke says, Alfred, is that you? It's like, this can't be Alfred.
So, and something in the cave starts showing them pictures as the story is being related to them. And it's talking about how it all started with a tooth, a metal tooth that could bring back the dead. The bedrock of an organization that stretched back centuries. Basically talking about the Court of Owls.
Mm-hmm.
Then all this is part of this mystery. You see, the metal shouldn't be able to do what Electrum could do. And it was part of their talons, basically, that they made. He extracted something from the metal, a strange substance that he never seen before, a metal that science couldn't explain.
And by the way, this voice is saying all this, there's different things floating, hung up on the cave wall. It looks like you got a Court of Owls ring, a Court of Owls mask, newspaper clippings, Dr. Fate's mask, Aquaman's trident, and Wonder Woman's gauntlets.
Yeah. But,
I don't know how Batman extracted all this stuff.
Well, at the same time, Hal's ring starts burning him.
Yes.
And it's heating
up, hotter
and
hotter.
But it talks about how the first thing Batman did when he started investigating this was he started his own team.
Now, this is what I've been saying. You know how I geeked out over Mr. Terrific, Plastic Man? Well, I geeked out over this, too. The Outsiders are being shown. So the Outsiders, I'm so glad. I'm sorry, Ken. Now, remind me. Then when we read the Button story, wasn't this a part of Batman's life that he didn't remember anymore?
I don't remember.
Okay, I don't either, but I'm glad to see that the Outsiders did happen in the Batman lore somewhere, and why he did go outside the Justice League to get these people.
And according to this, he created the Outsiders to investigate this mystery he's been trying to figure out.
Mm-hmm. This is the Outsider team that was in the 80s, guys. This is
Metamorpho, the Element Man.
Yeah, Metamorpho, Black Lightning, Katana, Halo, Geo-Force. They're all the characters Batman worked with years ago. They basically was like his Black Ops team.
Yeah.
But then as they go on, Hal says, something really went wrong here. I have no idea what's going on, and we should probably fall back. And then the voice says, oh, no. You can't do that. I've been dying for a chance to see both of you face to face. We're all connected, you see. I was hoping someone would come meddling one day. It's been so lonely down here. And he says, you cannot turn back now. And as they keep going, the voice says, this is the best part. It all has to do with the liquid metal, and the green and the metal has changed everything. It's they call it Dionysium?
Dionysium.
I don't know exactly what this is going to do yet, but the voice also says, but he wasn't the only one who found it. Was he? And then Duke says, no. So it's like Duke is beginning to think about maybe something he understands going on.
Okay.
Hal says, we got to get out of here. And then the voice says, oh, think straight. The pieces are coming together now, aren't they? Just like I did.
Hmm.
And the voice begins to say also,
You see, he was dragged onto this world for a reason. The same reason I'm sure the
same reason that your celestial bosses sent you digging for answers.
And then this is where Hal says, show yourself, and his ring starts going off on the fritz even more now. And then Hal leaves out a scream of, oh, I'm pretty sure his ring is burning his finger at this point. He says, my arm's on fire. Let's go back and get out of into the Batcave, and maybe we can bring the League here. Something's very, very wrong. And then Duke says, no, we keep going. Now something about Duke is putting pieces together. He wants to get to the bottom of this. And then this is where the voice says, oh, Mr. Green Lantern, are you afraid? The Green Lantern said, I don't get afraid. The voice says, oh, I think you do. I think we all do. All in one moment of discovery. When you're about to learn something, you will never be able to unlearn. And then this is where a light comes on. It's this big metal door. And it's, I mean, this thing is huge, guys. This is standing probably about a good 30 feet tall. This is way over Duke and Hal. The voice says, something puts us all out in pieces together and finally see that the truth and the world has changed. And you know it will never go back to the way it was before. But you're so very brave to just open that door.
And then we get back to Carter Hall's journal. When they're back in Egypt, he's studying everything. Because remember, over time, he remembers his past lives. Mm-hmm. So he starts studying everything to make sure, see what's going on, and starts putting things together.
And in the, in this picture also, this shows each version of Hawkman's mask from what happened in, when was Hawkman made, like the 40s or the 50s, to what he has in the previous.
Yeah, he was actually Justice Society back in the day.
Right, and we get to see the same mask he wore then and everything over time. It seems like it all came from over in Egypt.
Yeah, it talks about how for years he's been studying Nth Metal, find out what the properties are, how does it work, what's its abilities. He kept digging deeper, following every clue that he could find, until one day he got a glimpse of a story that became, or that began with the first men to walk on Earth, three tribes, or rather, four. And you see these three pictures of a bird, a bear, and a wolf, but then they add a bat to it.
Mm-hmm.
And it says, and something else. I was part of something bigger, something beyond my control.
Oh.
Huh?
That's also the Manhunter.
Yeah, it is. That's a Manhunter from... And I would do everything in my power to uncover what had been taken away from me, the secret that stretched back to the dawn of my species, no matter what the cost. Then you get the bat plane going to the Arctic Circle to the fortress. And he's basically going, because Superman's there, mm-hmm. and he asks for Superman for access to something that Batman hid there and asks Superman to never look at.
Never.
And Superman, being a man of his word, has never done it. And it's, he wants to, Batman finally realizes he has to open whatever this is. But Superman says straight up, I've seen the door, Bruce. There's nothing in this world that can actually open it.
Mm-hmm.
At that point, Mr. Miracle's standing there. He's like, I think that's why he called me.
Yep. He can open anything. He can get out.
So that's another one you've been looking forward to coming back soon.
And we talked about the thing a month ago that they're going to be making a new story of Mr. Miracle.
Yes.
So we're going to see a little glimpse of him before we get to that. A little teaser.
Mm-hmm. Well, then Miracle realizes that he built a secret room at the top of the world with one door and a lock that no one could ever open. What did you do with the key? And Batman tells him, I shot it into the sun.
Oh, okay. Yeah, Miss Miracle says, that's a joke, right? It's like, oh, Batman, you're crazy.
Batman asks him, can you open it? He says, they don't call me Mr. Miracle for nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So, but as he does, he starts to open the lock, and something starts breaking out of it. And he says, Batman, that can't be what I think it is. You can't have been stupid enough to hold on to. He goes, thank you, Scott, that'll be all. Miracle boom tubes out.
If you notice, look at this Batman face compared to that one. These are, guys, I love this story because in like each page that passes, there's a different artist on each
page.
This is definitely a collaborative project.
So, but as the vault starts breaking open, Miracle boom tubes out, and then you find this giant tower. And you go back to the pages of the journal, and you find out that this is basically... I wish I could go back to the moment to warn myself. I read the journal for everybody foolish enough to pick up my trail. Whatever you do, do not follow my footsteps. And Batman says, like a compass.
Completely undo it. I'm just laughing because Batman's going to do the complete opposite of what Hawkman wanted him not to do.
Exactly. But now he's starting to scan this giant gold tower or whatever it is. And obviously, Mr. Miracle knew what it was.
Mm-hmm.
But then we flip back.
I think this has to be also do something with Apocalypse. It looks like a tower could possibly come
from. Yeah, because if you look at the energy around the top of it, that looks like something from Apocalypse.
Yeah.
But then you get back to Hal and Duke back in the Batcave, and they've opened the door. Now it says, Batman, what did you get yourself into this time? Then the voice tells him, oh, I can help you with that. And you see the back of his head, and this guy, white skin and green hair. And he's writing numbers on a wall. And he says, this is a mystery that stretches back to the dawn of time. It's bigger than all of us, and it's and it sure as hell is bigger than you. You don't understand all that was just a cruel joke. You're just another couple of pieces in Batman's puzzle, just like me. Ha 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 ha. So it looks like the Joker has been locked in here for a very long time, writing these numbers on the wall. And the whole time you get Carter Hall's journals running commentary saying that some mysteries are best unsolved. Some doors are made to never be opened because through them all you'll find is horror.
Yep, and we see the Joker's happy, smiley, grinning face, laughing maniacally.
And now we were saying that this is a who's who that did this. Mm-hmm. This was written by Scott Snyder and James Tynion IV. Pencils were done by Jim Lee, Andy Kubert, and John Romita Jr. Inks were Scott Williams and Klaus Janson and Danny Mickey. Let's see other names that I know that are in here. The cover was done by Jim Lee, Scott Williams, and Alex Sinclair. They're variant covers by everybody in the world. This is a pretty big people on this. They're doing this book.
Oh yeah.
Now the next one is Dark Days Metal, which is the part two of this story, and it comes out next month.
And Batman's going to have a strange revelation. He's probably going to wish he never dug this deep once he finds out what's actually what's in for him in the Dark Days.
Exactly. So that leaves us basically one more place to go.
Oh, by the way, here's the variant covers.
Oh, nice.
I really like
that. Now, actually, do you have that picture of the... Before we get into the poll list, do you have that picture of Black Canary? We don't usually bounce back, but...
No, we don't, but...
That was pretty... Where's that picture? I want to take a look at this thing. There, whoop, you just passed it. Now, breaking, while we've been recording, they've actually released a picture of Black Canary's new costume, which they're moving away from the fishnet.
I mean, for obvious reasons. Sadly, but for TV purposes, they probably couldn't put that on there. I know people freaked out about the Barbie toy years ago.
Yeah. Well, it's basically all leather with the yellow accents.
Yes, thank goodness.
And it looks like leather kid gloves all the way up to the shoulder almost.
Mm-hmm. And she's got her black mask on. And
yeah.
Now, it's probably the light, but I was going to say her lipstick looks a little even like gold sparkle to it.
The major change here is the fact that we've got the yellow on the costume again. Mm-hmm. It's just yellow piping, just very little in there, but you can see that it is Black Canary's yellow. Black
now, her
yellow.
Hair is, she's still a brunette, she's not blonde, but with her outfit, I'm okay, this is Black Canary.
Yeah.
I'm so okay with Black Canary looking like this. I did screenshot this off of Twitter so I can post it on ours. I thought you could post pictures from Twitter and copy it on Instagram. I guess I can, maybe I haven't figured it out, but I will show you guys and put that on our Instagram later on tonight, you guys can see it.
Yep. Well, that leaves us one thing we gotta do. It's time to make a trip.
We gotta travel.
And that sounder can only mean one thing. It's time for us to take our weekly trip to the comic book shop. And today's comic shop is for June 28th, right?
Yep.
June 28th, 2017. Now, remember, the pull list is brought to you by the Shazbots. That was their song, Comic Book Shop. Check them out on Facebook and iTunes. And also go over to Shazbots.com for all your information about them. They've actually got some cool videos on there, too. So, but let them know the DC Superpowers podcast sent you. Now, we have 12 titles this week, plus two honorable mentions from the DC Looney Tunes crossovers.
Mm-hmm.
And we get to start the whole thing off with Action Comics 982. This is Revenge, Part 4. General Zod takes command as he leads Cyborg Superman, Eradicator, Mongol, Blank, and Metallo against Superman. But his real motives are yet to be revealed and may have far graver consequences than Superman or anyone else or anyone imagined. Or wait, let me go back and try that again. But his motives his real motives are yet to be revealed and may have far graver consequences for Superman than anyone imagines. Art is done by Victor Bogdanovich and is written by Dan Jurgens.
Nice. Our next one is Batgirl issue number 12, Troubled Waters. A terrifying creature is threatening members of Burnside YMCA, but no one can catch it. It's up to Batgirl to plunge into the unknown depths and risk being zapped out of existence to put an end to the danger. Art is done by Eleanor Carlini and written by Hope Larson.
Then next up, we get Batman Beyond number 9, Rise of the Demon Part 4. Can an older, physically weakened Bruce Wayne come out of retirement to rescue Batman? As Terry battles a renewed and more deadly Ra's al Ghul in Tibet, only Bruce knows that Terry is facing two life-threatening menaces, Ra's and the experimental Batman suit that he's now wearing. It's a race against time and a battle against impossible odds. Art done by Bernard Chang and is written by Dan Jurgens. Now, this is the storyline I'm wondering, because Matt is working with him a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering if this is not going to culminate in Matt becoming the new Robin.
I was hoping so.
That'd be awesome. Little Matty.
I mean, it'd be a perfect duo. You got Big Brother and Little Brother.
Exactly.
But we got Damien also as Ra's al Ghul.
Yeah, there's a lot of craziness going on right now.
Technically, wouldn't that be Terry's brother, though? And Matt's brother? Technically?
Well, not Matt's, because if I remember, Matt was only half brother for Terry.
Okay. Never mind. Well, Matt's out of the equation, but that's probably Terry's brother. I wonder if they're going to come call each other that at some point in the book.
That'd be interesting.
That would make even more of a dynamic between the two. But next we have Blue Beetle issue number 10, all hands on deck for the final battle against the powerful entity who has been lurking underground and wreaking havoc on the entire city of El Paso. Will the combined efforts of a rejuvenated Blue Beetle, Ted Kord, Dr. Fate, and even special guest star Omac be enough to bring down the ancient menace? The outcome will signal a major turning point in Jaime Reyes and his friends and allies.
Yeah, remember at this point, Jaime doesn't have the scarab.
No, he doesn't. And ours is done by Scott Collins, J.M. Dementez, and Keith Griffin. I'm trying to remember who Omac is. I need to Google it. I'm forgetting right now.
I know it's a character out of the 70s or 80s, I think.
I know the name.
You can look him up.
Picture. I thought it was that guy. Him, too? I thought he was a villain.
Omac?
Yeah, I thought Omac was a bad guy.
I don't know.
But with the way DC Comics have been, maybe he could have been a bad guy and now become a good one with everything that's been happening. Just trying to read up on him. With Brother Eye, yeah, I thought Brother Eye was pretty bad.
I gotta read that. I have Future's End Part 1, or Volume 1. I gotta finish reading through that.
Okay, yeah, I thought he was a bad guy, but from what it's saying in here, it looks like... Oh, here we go. He returns in Rebirth in Blue Beetle. He's a friend of Jaime Reyes. After seeing monsters in the city, Omac takes control of Kevin and begins fighting. Jamie convinces Omac to help him. So I guess he was a villain, but... Once again, DC Rebirth has said, hey, it's Rebirth. Why not we reinvent some of these villains?
That's right. Well, next up, we get Detective Comics 959, Intelligence Part 2. While his team comes to grips with Azrael's past, Batman is on the trail of the shocking secret that he learned at the end of last month's Batman Flash crossover, The Button. And it's brought him directly to the Mistress of Magic, Zatanna. Now, you remember what secret, part of the secret that he learned, we don't know how he learned it, but remember, I'm wondering if this is not the secret he's trying to find Tim Drake still. Remember, he came back out of the Button storyline looking for Tim Drake.
Yeah. Who knows? This could play a
part. Maybe this is what's going to bring Tim back.
Because that's where he supposedly had died, was in Detective Comic Book, so that would make sense to find him back. They need to get back on track with that instead of doing another story.
Exactly. Well, the art is done by Raul Fernandez and Alvaro Martinez, and is written by James T. Tinian IV.
Next on our list, we have The Flash, issue number 25. Running Scared, Part 1. When Eobard Thawne murdered Barry Allen's mother, he killed the piece of The Flash's past. Now, Reverse Flash is back to kill Barry Allen's future. The Flash's biggest storyline yet begins as he is pushed to his limits and his secrets are laid bare in the chase through time itself. Don't miss the Extra Size anniversary issue. Ooh, an anniversary issue.
Yeah, well, all of the issue 25s have been like that, remember?
Yeah, I keep forgetting that's down to 25s.
Yeah.
Halfway to 50. Art is done by Howard Porter, Carmine DiDomenico, and written by Joshua Williams.
Okay. Next up, we have Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern Corps, number 23. Fracture, part 2. As the Green Lanterns... As a Green Lantern stands accused, and Hal Jordan rushes to his defense against the Sinestro Corps, Guy Gardner and his partner, or his new partner, Arkillo, embark on a mission that, if successful, could stop both sides from killing each other. Art done by Ethan Van Sciver, and it's written by Robert Venditti.
Next, we have Hellblazer issue number 11, Smokeless Fire part 5. Constantine thought about taking an old frenemy's advice, but Paris has Bistros to sit in a wine and drink. With a little patience and a little bit of magic, things have a way of shoring themselves out. Unless Mary crosses the finish line first, that is. Art done by David Fabry and written by Simon Oliver. It sounds like Constantine might need some help from Zatanna this week instead of Batman.
Yeah, sounds like it. Next up, we got the Justice League of America, part number 9. Now, wow, that one's going quick. But
yeah,
then doing the bi-weekly ones, it does that.
Yeah. As we said, we like Justice League of America a little bit better than Justice League.
Right now, yeah. I think it's Steve Orlando writing it, that's why.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been liking what he's doing on Nightwing.
True.
But The Man from Monster Valley, part 2. The hidden truth of Maxon and his family is brought to the surface, as are his superhuman powers, which the man from Monster Valley turns on the Justice League in this tale of treachery and revenge. Art is done by Scott Hanna and Felipe Watanabe, and it's written by Steve Orlando.
Oh, this is something I'm waiting for. I'm not liking this cover, though, but I am excited for this, see what happens.
It's actually not as bad as I thought as when you first mentioned it.
Yeah, it's just I know this is from the movie, and I don't like them using the comic book and movie costumes like that crossing.
Yeah.
But next is issue number 20 for the Suicide Squad. False Flag, part 1. See? He's not dead. They're saying it right there. Task Force X needs a new team leader, and the pickings are slim. A cannibalistic crocodile man, a schizophrenic witch demon, a one-armed assassin, a lady who talks to her sword, and a racist drunkard. But there's also the homicidal clown girl who... sorry, these names. Devastated by the loss of her crush, returns to the dark and violent path, which there can be no escape. As I said earlier in the Suicide Squad issue, she's going a little crazy. And as you said, not going, she's gone.
Yeah,
but
she's
having
gone.
A moment right now. And I don't know if she's going to come back from this. Art is done by Eber Ferreira, Edward Prodovich, and written by Rob Williams.
Okay, we've got two more titles for Rebirth this week. Teen Titans number 9, The Blood of the Manta, part 1.
Oh, yeah.
Still dealing with the consequences of the Lazarus contract, Kid Flash's status with the team is challenged by Damian, and the Teen Titans will never be the same. Meanwhile, Aqualad learns more about his powers, and the truth of his lineage is revealed. Now, if anybody who knows who Aqualad is will know what that truth of his lineage is.
Yes.
Now, art done by Wade Von Graubadger and Koi Pham is written by Benjamin Percy.
I couldn't find the picture, but seeing Wally West walk away like that, where is that? That kind of reminds me of when Dick and Wally walked away from being Kid Flash and Robin in one of the issues of Teen Titans. They left their costume behind, just walked away. That, if I can find it, I'll show you to you after the show. But that,
okay.
I think that's a little callback there.
Well, we got one last book on the actual Rebirth books.
And that is Wonder Woman issue 25, so this is another anniversary mm-hmm. issue. The description for this is very light. Writer Greg Rucker waves throughout the threads of The Lies, Year One, The Truth, and God Watch. Every story in Wonder Woman since the start of DC's Rebirth era in an extra-size anniversary issue. Art done by Beliquis Ivley, Liam Sharp, and written by Greg Rucka. And this is one of the things I did really like about what they're doing with Wonder Woman. They're showing different parts of her life and putting it into one story, because if you remember in the first Rebirth story, she looked herself in the mirror. I don't remember if she punched the mirror or the mirror just cracked as she was, seemed like she was going crazy. The Rebirth, out of anybody, I think, also in the Rebirth era that had all these other things happening to them, they know something's off, was Wonder Woman. Because she's lived for so long, I think all these different parts of her life are beginning to crumble in on her. Like, what was real? What was not? She's got to try to figure it out. Everybody else says Batman had one life. Superman's been here for one life.
Wonder Woman's been here before Superman even crash-landed on this planet.
Yeah.
So she's dealing with a lot of stress right now in her mind of all these memories, and I'm glad they're finally tying something more together with this anniversary issue.
Okay. Well, that brings us to our two special edition comics that we decided to do for this, that we've been doing. We started with last week's Bugs Bunny Justice League, or Legion of Superheroes, and Martian Manhunter and Marvin the Martian.
Which was a great... just to give you guys a little rundown on this, Marvin the Martian and Martian Manhunter issue was basically... Martian Manhunter felt really lonely, and he wanted to see another Martian, so he made this device where other Martians can come to the planet Earth. For some reason, Marvin the Martian comes through. He's like, oh, cool, another alien. He's like, hey, there's another alien. Hey, you want to help me do this? He's like, no, I'm going to help you. These people are bad. So let's blow up the planet. He's like, wait, what? He says, don't worry, my alien friend. Everything will be fine. He's like, oh, no, what have I done? By the end of all this, we learn a little bit more into Marvin's backstory, how people have been very cruel to him, so he don't see them as being good. And as he saw, people are still being cruel to Martian Manhunter. They think he's working with him. He's like, no, I'm here to help. Until the very end, they find out Martian Manhunter is good. Marvin's bad, and the way he tricks Marvin into being in a cell so he can send him back to wherever he came from, he plays mind tricks with him because, of course, Martian Manhunter can do that.
Yeah.
And he shakes the general's hand. The general says, sorry for not trusting you. Maybe we can come to a better friendship here. He says, long as you trust me, I will always be here to save you guys. And they shake hands. And Martian Manhunter is okay with everyone on planet Earth now.
Cool.
And then in what happened with Bugs Bunny and the Legion of Superheroes, they want to find Superman because Supergirl has gone to this weird coma state and she can't wake up. And the only person they know that can help is Superboy. Well, they somehow send this little device of Brainiacs to find him on Earth. And they go to Smallville. He brings Bugs Bunny back instead of Superboy. And if you look at the way where Bugs Bunny was, it looked like he was a farmer in Kansas or something.
Okay.
So I guess he got him mistaken.
He's probably a carrot farmer.
He was a carrot farmer, actually. And they get there and they battle some villains. And then somehow he has like these carrots that give him superpowers. And Bugs Bunny's like, well, while they're fighting this villain, I'm going to leave and go back to where I came from. This doesn't feel right. So he eats a carrot, becomes like the Super Bugs Bunny, and he beats him, and then somehow he helps with Supergirl, and she comes back to normal. And it's just really the best thing about the story was just seeing all of Bugs Bunny's quick remarks of being inside the future. He's like, who's where am I? It's Bugs Bunny being Bugs Bunny. If anybody's watched it, whenever he sees like a weird monster, he freaks out, and he's naming, it's just Bugs Bunny seeing superheroes, and it's just an amazing read. You guys got to read. I can't really describe it. Just, I can't do it justice.
Okay. Well, for this week, we actually get the first one I'll take care of. We have Batman Elmer Fudd Special Number 1. After a chance meeting with billionaire Bruce Wayne, Elmer Fudd's obsession quickly escalates into stalking Batman through the dark alleys and high class social settings of Gotham City. Welcome to Bat Season.
You're going to try to hunt the Batman?
Well, and the Bonus Looney Tunes backup story features DC characters written by Tom King and artwork by Byron Vaughns. The main story was art by Lee Weeks and also written by Tom King.
I feel like they're going to give Elmer Fudd some more special tactics, because if he can catch Bugs Bunny, I know he's not going to catch it.
Be very, very quiet. I'm hunting bats.
This is going to be a weird issue. I'm going to love it. The next we have Jonah Hex and Yosemite Sam Special Number 1. Now, we have seen the Legion of Superheroes come back in Justice League and a little bit throughout the Rebirth whole storyline. We did not see Martian Manhunter back, so that was a great thing about Rebirth. And this one, Batman's a big part of Rebirth. But we haven't seen Jonah Hex yet.
Yeah, it's the first time we've seen him since they've relaunched everything.
I can't wait to see how he's going to look. When Minor Yosemite Sam strikes at Rich, word gets out and everyone comes gunning for his wealth. To protect himself and his new riches, he hires bounty hunter Jonah Hex, but the man protecting him may be his worst nightmare. And the Bonus Looney Tunes backup story features DC characters written by Bill Manti and artwork done by Dave Alvarez. Also, I just want to say, they didn't give any mention, but he's definitely a prominent member on the cover. Froghorn Leghorn's in here. Now, is he working with Yosemite Sam? Is he working
trying to kill? It looks like it, but I don't know.
Now, he might be the guy that's out there to kill Yosemite Sam and leading a posse maybe to get his money. I have no idea, but they didn't say anything about him, but he is definitely going to be featured in this book.
Okay.
And that, I think, wraps it up.
Well, who did the book?
Oh, sorry. Written by Jimmy Palamani.
Okay.
And this is backup art, and I'm sorry, the main art was also done by Mark Taxera.
Okay. Well, that brings us to the end of another issue.
Yep. Had a pretty packed episode, too, for all this news. We didn't. It's weird kind of not having any TV shows to review along with just this news. I feel like we've gotten more news since the shows have died down.
Yeah. Well, without all the shows, we actually have more time to do more books, too. We actually were able to do, what, 5 books this week?
Yeah.
So we got a little bit more time for stuff like that. Now, remember, Super Friends, next week we will still be on Facebook Live. And I know a lot of you have checked out Facebook Live today while we've been doing the show. Thank you guys for checking that out. And we know you guys have been going back and watching the videos, even if you don't watch it all the way through, just checking it out. Thank you. But let us know if you've checked in on the video. Let us know what you think of the basement of the Hall of Justice. What do you think of the posters and the way we've built
it up? Set it up.
How's it looking stuff? Also, remember that in 2 weeks' time, as I think we're going
to
do it, we're
going to
switch from Facebook Live to YouTube Live. Now, we're going to try to figure out how to do it live. If not, we will at least have the videos up after the show.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. We may end up still being on Facebook Live and then doing YouTube also. I don't know. We'll figure it. We got to figure out how we're doing this.
We will get there.
But we will get it figured out. It's all figuring out the tech.
Yeah.
So, but after that, Vernon, why don't you let everybody know how they can get a hold of us?
Guys, if you're looking for us for our social media, our Twitter is @SuperpowersDC. If you want us on Facebook or Instagram, which I'm going to be putting these pictures up, that is DC Superpowers Podcast. And also for my personal usage, which I also share pictures throughout the websites, that is Howlin@Wolf. And just to let everybody know, it's Howlin_@_Wolf. My Twitter is VYellow, and my Facebook is Vernon McWayne Moore.
And you can find me on Instagram and Twitter at GW1Ken. On Facebook, I'm just Ken Rose. You can also get a hold of us through at DCSuperpowersPodcast@gmail.com. And we are members of the Tangibound Network and the Weeby Geeks Networks at TangiboundNetwork.com and WeebyGeeksPC.com. And other than that, Vernon, do you have anything else before the end of today?
Just thank you, everybody, for out there listening to us, tuning in, watching us weekly. We really appreciate it. It keeps us doing what we're doing.
I couldn't have said any better. So, Vernon, thank you for hanging out with us this week.
Anytime.
And Vernon, we'll see you next week. And Super Friends, we'll see you next week.